Everybody, and welcome to another episode of the What's Good Games podcast, your source for video game news, commentary, analysis, and funny stuff every Friday. I'm Andrea Renee, joined by Miss Brittany Brombacher.
Hello, my little princess.
And Miss Christine Steimer.
Hello.
Do we give any context, or do we just leave it at
no,
that?
No, well, it's just, no. Right. Let's roll with it.
All right. Let's just leave it where it is. Welcome to the show. Whether it's your first episode or your 155th episode, we're glad that you are joining us here at What's Good Games, a video games podcast, to talk about the news of the week. And we've got quite a jam-packed episode for today. So we're going to dive right into our announcements. If you guys haven't visited us at twitch.tv/whatsgoodgames, we would love for you to stop on by. We're officially an affiliate, which means you can use our fancy emotes. We got our faces and the pillow. The That's What She Said pillow, because we know that you guys like it. It's really fun to use in the chat. That's twitch.tv/whatsgoodgames, where you can catch What's Good Games live every Monday morning at 11 a.m. Pacific time. We would love you guys to join us in the chat or send us your questions, which you can also do at whatsgoodgames.com/dearWGG. This coming Monday, May the 4th, that's right, May the 4th be with you. We are going to be hosting a special stream with the team from Manticore to showcase their video game building engine called Core. We're going to be building a really cool What's Good Games hub world. The team is going to show me how to use some of their tools. We're going to walk through it all together. That's going to be happening immediately after the What's Good Games live taping. We're shooting for a 1 p.m. start time, so hopefully you guys will come on by. And what's really cool about it is that you guys can join us inside the game, so we can share the link with you guys in chat. And if you have Core installed in your computer already, you can come and run around in the game with me while we're streaming. So if you are planning on joining us on Monday, might be a good time to install it. It is a free service to use. You just got to go to Manticore's website and get it installed and prepare for Monday. You can join me on my little building adventure. Should be fun.
I'm wondering, stream alongside you. Oh, I can do both. Stream, like, you know, I'll be in chat and I'll be on camera, but I can also download Core and run around.
You can, yeah. We won't be able to stream your gameplay, but we'll be able to see you in my world.
That's all we need. Oh, yeah. That's going to be great. Can I ruin everything you make?
No.
Be nice.
Oh. Sorry, Mom.
I'm a little disturbed that that was your first instinct.
I just wonder if I can wreak havoc, you know? Like, come and make it lively and spicy. If I'm feeling a little spicy that day.
There's definitely a lot of things you can take advantage of, and they have a lot of tools, and there's mounts, and you can make a custom avatar, and there's all kinds of things that we're going to show you guys on stream. But no, it's my world. You can't break it. So
I think that belongs on a t-shirt.
It's my world. You can't break it?
Yeah.
That sounds like a t-shirt for a little princess.
Oh, it sure does. Don't tear down my castle, bitch.
All right, let's go.
In other news, we have some other cool streaming events that are happening next week. So in addition to what we're doing on Monday, it was just announced today in the weekly This Week at Bungie that I am going to be participating in a Bungie bounty with none other than Kind of Funny's Greg Miller. That guy. I gave him a bunch of shit when we originally talked about doing this because I was like, when's the last time you even played Destiny? So you guys may have heard about Bungie bounties. It's part of a charity initiative that Bungie is participating in called Guardian's Heart. So I'm just going to read straight from the TWAB so you guys get the rundown It says, we're still raising money to benefit frontline healthcare workers who are putting their personal safety on the line to confront COVID-19. Just a few weeks into this month-long initiative, we're knocking on the door of our goal. We are so grateful for your support. Thanks to our partners at Direct Relief, these donations will find their way into the hands of heroes all around the world. The parade of bungee bounties will continue to raise awareness for how this community is doing more than staying at home and waiting for this whole thing to blow over. Here's who you can expect on the hunt in the coming weeks. And then they list a bunch of people that are going to be participating in the bungee bounties. And on the final day, it's kind of funny. And what's good games at 12 p.m. Pacific time on May 8th. So that is not this Friday when the show is published, but the following Friday on May 8th at 12 p.m. Pacific time. We'll be streaming for a couple of hours. Essentially, just to wrap it up so you guys can, if you want to get all of the details, of course, just go to bungee.net. But if people matchmake against Greg and I in the Crucible and they eliminate us or they beat us in the round, they get a special emblem in the game. It's part of the bounty. And so essentially, we're not going to be throwing every match, but if we did, then everybody would get the emblem.
Yeah, it would be for the greater good.
Exactly. But here's the thing. Greg hasn't played in a really long time, so I think we're going to be on the struggle bus anyway. But CJ Gibson, if you guys remember him from his days at Fireteam Chat, who now works at Bungie, is going to be playing with us. And I think Fran is going to be streaming along with us, but because he is going to be participating in a Bungie bounty with his old Fireteam Chat cohorts, I don't think he's going to be participating in the specialty emblem with us. Regardless, we're going to be raising money for healthcare workers to help combat COVID-19 around the world, and we're going to have some fun. So hopefully you guys will join us. And a big shout out and thanks to Bungie for coordinating this. I think it's a really great initiative. And then another announcement, Friday, May 15th, we're going to be appearing on Animal Talking, Gary Whitta's new talk show, which we're going to be talking about a little later in the show, because the following day is the What's Good Games third anniversary on Saturday, May 16th, starting at 12 p.m. Pacific time. Brittany, what's happening that day? Anything cool?
There's a lot of cool things that are happening. One of those things is I just want to give a big thanks to all the kids and the adults and the humans. And we didn't get any dogs, unfortunately, that submitted any videos. But we've been asking for people to send their videos in for a fun compilation video we're going to be making. And we got a large amount of submissions. And
yay!
Yeah, it was really exciting. And I was looking through a few of them. And I want to give everyone kudos on the lighting. You guys picked really good lighting. You talked very clearly. I'm very proud of all of you. And just watching people and listening to them talk about, you know, what they love about What's Good and some of our little, like, inside jokes. I got a little emotional, and then I had to stop watching because I also don't want to watch all of them because I would love it if it could be a surprise for some of us too, you know, as we're watching to be like,
yeah. Oh, yeah, I see. Really cool. I see what you mean. Yeah.
Yeah. But they're really great. And we're going to be streaming, playing some games, drinking, having some Q&A. It's going to be a really fun day to celebrate.
Dude, I'm so ready. Of course, in case anybody was wondering, yes, Miss Rihanna Manuel will be joining us. It's going to be awesome. We were originally going to, of course, do it here in the studio, but because shelter in place has been extended, we shall not do that. Instead, we will do it separately, but together, you know, alone, together, but together.
But separate.
Alone together. Yes.
Exactly. Yeah.
You guys forgot my stream next week. You skipped right over me.
Oh, no. Oh, no, sweetheart. I was saving the best for last.
Oh, I feel special now. I thought I was going chronologically, but I guess time has no meaning anymore anyway, so it's fine.
Well, I was growing chronologically for the announcements, but the reason why I saved the best for last is because people need to know how amazing you are at streaming dating sims.
Oh.
And if you joined us for the Patreon stream, for our After Hours stream, you saw us start our adventure in Later Daters, and Steimer is going to continue and finish the adventure in Later Daters on her birthday.
Yeah.
Next Wednesday, May 6th, is Steimer's birthday, and she's going to stream for you, and Brittany and I are going to join her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I took the day off work, but we're in shelter in place, so I can't go anywhere. So what better way to celebrate than with all of my internet friends?
Oh, for sure.
And I'm playing excited. A dating sim, which I love. So
I think I'm going to make one of those cake in a boxes just for the event.
Yes, do it.
Which is a really big deal for me.
If you cooked anything, that would make me very happy.
She just means
cake in a box.
Oh, you mean like a box of cake mix.
Box, yeah.
Yeah. Cake in a box.
Mix.
You said a cake in a box.
It's in a box.
It's a cake in a box.
I guess it technically is a cake, but it's not. Box. It's just the mix, though, because the cake is not made. Okay, never mind. It's fine.
Don't pull a Stammer on me. Don't get all logical, okay? Don't need that from you, princess.
I won't. Thank you so much to this month's Patreon producers. Chewy's Godson, Alex Rogopoulos, Ferris Ate, Mohammed Mohammed, Marcus Brown, Punctified Amale, Bittner. And welcome to our Patreon community, McBeer Me. That's clever. I like that. Callum Smith, Maz Mikasa, Louis Creech, Dustin Lewis, and Trevor Franz. Franz. And Brittany, we've got some new podcast reviewers.
We do. The first one comes from Ibu Ibokui.
I saw this one.
Who says, I never thought I would willingly listen to Andrea talk by choice after all of my years managing GameStop, but her and the crew really have something special, and I'm here for it. I thought that was really funny.
Aw, thanks. Aww.
That is a compliment.
Thanks. I'll take the backhanded compliment.
It's backhanded, but I think the motivation is good. And then we also have a review from Stormin May, the lazy analyst. It's all bare bearings. And thank you all so much for your written 5-star reviews. They really help us in the little algorithm that are the SEO of podcasts and iTunes and everywhere else. And it helps people find our show. So thank you all so much. Appreciate it. And it's fun to read them and put some funny little quotes in here as well.
It is indeed. And on that note, let's get into the news. But before we do that, I want to tell you it's brought to you by ExpressVPN. Okay, so we all know how ExpressVPN protects your privacy and security online, right? But here's something you might not know. You can also use ExpressVPN to unlock movies and shows that are only available in other countries. Sneaky. I love it. Now that so many of us are stuck at home, it's only a matter of time until you run out of stuff to watch on Netflix. Let's be honest, we're all just browsing, yeah. And nothing looks good anymore. So this whole week, I've been using ExpressVPN to look for things in other territories because I've heard lots of good things about Studio Ghibli. And I even have a shirt that's a riff on my neighbor Totoro, but I've actually never seen it. Boom. ExpressVPN lets me kind of sneak my way into Japan Netflix by using their service. And so now I get to watch the movie. It's the best. You ladies have seen that movie. Yes? No?
I actually haven't. I need to use ExpressVPN to log into a different Netflix so that I could do this exact same thing.
Help me get to Japan.
Girl, I will hook you up. Don't you worry. It's so simple. You just fire up It's so simple to do. You just fire up the ExpressVPN app, change your location to Japan or the UK if you want to watch Doctor Who or wherever, and then you refresh Netflix and boom, that's it. ExpressVPN hides your IP address and lets you control where you want sites to think you're located. You can choose from almost 100 different countries. So just think about all of the Netflix libraries you can go through. Love anime? Use ExpressVPN to access Japanese Netflix like we've been talking about. But it's not just Netflix, you guys. ExpressVPN works with any streaming service. Hulu, BBC iPlayer, YouTube, you name it. There are hundreds of VPNs out there, but the reason to use ExpressVPN to watch shows is that it's ridiculously fast. There's never any buffering or lag, and you can stream in HD with no problem. ExpressVPN is also compatible with all of your devices, phones, media consoles, smart TVs, and more. So you can watch what you want to on a personal device or on a big screen wherever you are. If you visit our special link right now at expressvpn.com/whatsgoodgames, you can get an extra 3 months of ExpressVPN for free. You heard that right. If you can not only get an extra 3 months of ExpressVPN for free, but you're supporting everything we do here at What's Good Games, plus watch what you want. Plus, you can just watch what you want. That's what I meant to say there. And, of course, protect yourself with ExpressVPN at expressvpn.com/whatsgoodgames. That's the key. You got to use the /whatsgoodgames so that ExpressVPN knows that we sent you and not some other podcast.
Mm-hmm,
thanks, everyone, for supporting all that we do. Now go watch some cool anime. Okay, ladies. I am so excited about this news.
I was going to try to hum some Viking music, but I don't even know what that would sound like.
It's like very chanty, though, Viking music, I feel like.
Beards and braids and stinky men. Oh, long beards and axes and gods.
It's pretty good.
Thanks.
Yeah. No, like, I think like, that's pretty, that, I mean, you could be in the trailer right now. You could be the background for that trailer.
I feel like I need to bust out my Billy Goat beard as like my
Oh, yes. Oh, shit. That's you totally, gotta
Can you braid it?
It's your Britney Viking beard.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, put like a little pony here and then braid the rest of it.
Okay. Okay. I'll try to make
and
this
then,
happen.
And then yell about Odin a little bit and you'll be good to go.
Okay. 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 I got this.
Oh, Odin's son.
Okay, while we're watching Brittany braid her chin beard, I'm going to go ahead and start reading the story. So in case you missed it, Assassin's Creed Valhalla was announced this week. So we knew that something Nordic themed was coming down the pipe for Assassin's Creed. We thought it was Ragnarok, which must have been. Okay, hold on. Let me just. Brittany, this is gold.
Odin!
I love
Why
you.
Why would you forsake me, Odin?
Oh my god.
Okay.
You're the best, Brittany.
If you weren't already married, I would marry your ass.
Girl. Marriage doesn't mean shit.
It's perfect. It's perfect. So anyway, it's officially announced. It's coming holiday 2020 for PC on Epic Games Store and Steam, for PlayStation 4 and PlayStation 5, for Xbox One and Xbox Series X and Stadia. So that's definitely a lot of places to play. Xbox got out in front and said, yes, this is going to be part of smart delivery, which means that if you buy it for Xbox One, you will get to play it for free when you buy an Xbox Series X, and vice versa. If you buy it for Xbox Series X, you can take that copy to your Xbox One and play it there. The why you would do that is unclear. Maybe somebody is borrowing your Series X, or maybe you are a multi-Xbox household and the Xbox One is in one room and the Series X is in another. I don't know. Anyway, the good news is that if you buy it in one place with Xbox, you can have it for free on both. And I assume PlayStation is going to match that, because it would be crazy if they didn't, but they haven't announced if they are or not. Anywho, continuing on, here are some fast facts that I've compiled. The time period is set in 873 AD is when the main story begins. That is when England is a land but not a country, and is made up of several individual kingdoms with many different kings that rule over parts of it. The hero is named Eivor, and I have Eivor like Cravor because it's actually E-I, so I wanted to get the pronunciation in there. It's kind of like when Bayek first became a thing, and we were all calling him Bayek because Bayek.
Bay.
It's because he was Bay.
Mm-hmm.
He was definitely Bay. The male and female option, like they had in Odyssey Returns, so you will be able to play a female or a male Eivor. The Hidden Blade is back, and if you watch Yusuf do the Ubisoft official breakdown of the trailer, he points out that it's top-mounted this time instead of mounted underneath, which is a nice little touch, and they
that
go into the details
safer
about that.
If you're thinking logistically.
Yeah, right?
Right? You don't want to accidentally slice off your own finger underneath.
True, but depending on the style of your bracer, it might be harder to hide the blade on the top versus hiding the blade underneath.
Totally.
Would be my guess. But yeah, you're right. It is definitely safer. You're not like slitting your own wrist by accident. ships are back, which we anticipated, and it looks like boarding ships and ship battles are back as well. Conquests are back. Well, at least it very heavily indicates the conquests are back. We are going to run across the Assassins and the Templars, or in this time period, as they're known, the Hidden Ones and the Order of the Ancients. And they are going to continue the present day journey and continue Layla's journey as well. Creative director Ashraf Ismail said that we have some surprising yet unexpected content for our players who love that kind of stuff. But of course, it's not going into any detail. And just as a reminder, Ashraf, if you haven't seen any of the interviews he's done, I've interviewed him so many times over the course of his career at Ubisoft. He was the game director on both Assassin's Creed Origins and Assassin's Creed 4 Black Flag, two of my favorite ACs. And Darby McDivitt is back. He this time is the narrative director. He previously was the lead writer for Black Flag, Revelations, and Embers. So seasoned team at the helm for Assassin's Creed Valhalla. So there was a couple of outlets, a very select few outlets that got to do interviews ahead of the announcement. And the one that I pulled from was Game Informer. They do such a great job with their features that I really like the interview that they did with Ash. So I'm just going to read a couple of excerpts from him. He said, "There's a lot that I can't get into for spoiler reasons, but overall, the idea is of this place is, but the overall idea of this place of glory that you're trying to reach. This is very meaningful to the personal journey of our hero, Eivor. Eivor is a Viking raider who will leave Norway for the rolling hills of England. This is something that happens very early in the journey of our game for the goal of settling their people and building a thriving settlement. Norway is beautiful, but it was a very harsh place to live. There's war, there's a lack of space to grow. The idea of finding a better place to thrive was very important. The thing we've tried to balance there in the identity of Eivor is someone who is a lone wolf, who has ambition and glory they want to achieve for themselves, but they also have a community that needs them. We kind of play off this balance. At what point does your ambition override the needs of other people? This is a little bit more into the personal journey of Eivor, so the name Valhalla is significant to that journey in terms of this ambition. I can't get into the elements beyond that, aside from it being a very iconic Norse term and place. Then he continues talking about the setting for the game. And again, if you want to read the entire interview, I highly encourage you to go to GameInformer.com and do so. Saying, it's Norway and the Dark Ages of England, specifically the 9th century. In terms of England, it's quite a large map. We focus on four major kingdoms, Wessex, Northumbria, East Anglia, I think it's Angela, and Mercia. So for history buffs, they can look for that. It's a large part of England, and within that you have three major cities, London, Winchester, and Jorvik, now called York in modern days, but Jorvik back then. And we have a ton of towns, and of course we have Norway as well, which is really cool. That's the core. We have other surprises that I won't get into in terms of the world and the map, but that's the heart of the journey. We start in Norway, and we see the natural beauty of the world, but we also feel the difficulty of living in this barren land. So we move from there and settle into England, and then it's about the journey through the kingdoms of England, and of course players can go back and forth to Norway as they please, which is interesting. So open world returns, which we've seen in the last couple ACs, and then of course the ships. The Vikings are known for their ships, so in order to succeed and start thriving, players will go on raids. They'll raid their enemies, but to raid you need a long ship. And I love that in every interview that Ash did, he called it the Ferrari of ships. So he said you'll have a long ship and a crew. These are characters that you're going to meet in the world, much like we did in Odyssey. Characters you go on journeys with, and there are characters you can customize and build as well. They're called Yum's Vikings, which is interesting. So a lot of effort has gone into your raiders, and these are people who also live in your settlement. Beyond raiding, there are assaults. Assaults are attacks on giant fortifications. There are big set piece moments that are wrapped into the narrative. And this is something we found in our research that happened quite a lot. So we needed to find a place for that in the game and give it a lot of value and make it shine. These are really incredible battles. And in his video that he did with Yusuf on the Ubisoft YouTube page, he talked a lot about the epic scale of some of these battles, which was really exciting. And then on combat, I'm almost to the end of this, guys.
This is good.
It says that we can't claim to create the ultimate Viking experience if we don't nail combat. So combat is visceral and brutal. We made sure that every swing of an axe, every defense with a shield feels good. A lot of effort has gone into the weaponry of the period, into the enemies. You can't have a good fight system if the enemies don't shine. So we have a lot of variety in enemies, which is something that has been a major criticism in the combat of the Assassin's Creed franchise in the past, which we'll get into later. A new take on progression and gear. We've pushed every single envelope to deliver the Viking experience. He also mentioned that there's dual wielding has been confirmed. And if you want to, you can dual wield two shields.
Oh.
I'm not sure how that would work.
Just bash the shit out of everybody.
Yep, exactly. If you really like to get up close and personal, shield bros is for you. And use words like visceral, crunchy, brutal, weighty, and then, of course, the RPG elements. So this has been something that I've really loved to see the franchise delve into, but I know some purists of the franchise are very upset that it feels like it's turned into just like an action RPG instead of more of a stealth action game. So the RPG elements are back and, of course, more fleshed out than they ever have been before. The way the gear works is completely revamped. Every piece of gear you find is unique. You can upgrade each piece of gear. If you wish to carry the same piece of gear to the end of the game, you can.
Yeah.
Or if you want to collect everything, that's up to you. Everything has its own unique value. At a certain point, you can start to customize your gear. Players have this quite large, he mentioned, skill graph that they can sort of traverse through the journey of Eivor, picking up new skills, picking up a lot of playstyle elements to fine-tune the Viking you are. I'm sure we'll hear more about that later, and it includes everything from abilities to skills to weaponry. We have a new, fresh take on progression that we feel is anchored in the world and the Viking fantasy we're trying to achieve.
Oh, God. It sounds good. And something else IGN had talked about in their feature as well was the settlement. And I'm not familiar with the settlements in the Assassin's Creed games, but I'm sure.
Everybody, and welcome to another episode of the What's Good Games podcast, your source for video game news, commentary, analysis, and funny stuff every Friday. I'm Andrea Renee, joined by Miss Brittany Brombacher.
Hello, my little princess.
And Miss Christine Steimer.
Hello.
Do we give any context, or do we just leave it at
no,
that?
No, well, it's just, no. All right. Let's roll with it.
All right. Let's just leave it where it is. Welcome to the show. Whether it's your first episode or your 155th episode, we're glad that you are joining us here at What's Good Games, a video games podcast, to talk about the news of the week. And we've got quite a jam-packed episode for today, so we're going to dive right into our announcements. If you guys haven't visited us at twitch.tv/whatsgoodgames, we would love for you to stop on by. We're officially an affiliate, which means you can use our fancy emotes. We got our faces and the pillow. The That's What She Said pillow, because we know that you guys like it. It's really fun to use in the chat. That's twitch.tv/whatsgoodgames, where you can catch What's Good Games live every Monday morning at 11 a.m. Pacific time. We would love you guys to join us in the chat or send us your questions, which you can also do at whatsgoodgames.com/dearWGG. This coming Monday, May the 4th, that's right, May the 4th be with you. We are going to be hosting a special stream with the team from Manticore to showcase their video game building engine called Core. We're going to be building a really cool What's Good Games hub world. The team is going to show me how to use some of their tools. We're going to walk through it all together. That's going to be happening immediately after the What's Good Games live taping. We're shooting for a 1 p.m. start time, so hopefully you guys will come on by. And what's really cool about it is that you guys can join us inside the game, so we can share the link with you guys in chat. And if you have Core installed in your computer already, you can come and run around in the game with me while we're streaming. So if you are planning on joining us on Monday, might be a good time to install it. It is a free service to use. You just got to go to Manticore's website and get it installed and prepare for Monday. You can join me on my little building adventure. It should be fun.
I'm wondering, stream alongside you. Oh, I can do both. Stream, like, you know, I'll be in chat and I'll be on camera, but I can also download Core and run around.
You can, yeah. We won't be able to stream your gameplay, but we'll be able to see you in my world.
That's all we need. Oh, yeah. That's gonna be great. Can I ruin everything you make?
No.
Be nice. Oh.
Sorry, Mom.
I'm a little disturbed that that was your first instinct.
I just wonder if I can wreak havoc, you know? Like, come and make it lively and spicy. If I'm feeling a little spicy that day.
There's definitely a lot of things you can take advantage of, and they have a lot of tools, and there's mounts, and you can make a custom avatar, and there's all kinds of things that we're going to show you guys on stream. But no, it's my world. You can't break it. So
I think that belongs on a t-shirt.
It's my world. You can't break it?
Yeah.
That sounds like a t-shirt for a little princess.
Oh, it sure does. Don't tear down my castle, bitch.
All right, let's go.
In other news, we have some other cool streaming events that are happening next week. So in addition to what we're doing on Monday, it was just announced today in the weekly This Week at Bungie that I am going to be participating in a Bungie bounty with none other than Kind of Funny's Greg Miller. Ooh. That guy. I gave him a bunch of shit when we originally talked about doing this because I was like, when's the last time you even played Destiny? So you guys may have heard about Bungie bounties. It's part of a charity initiative that Bungie is participating in called Guardian's Heart. So I'm just going to read straight from the TWAB so you guys get the rundown. It says, we're still raising money to benefit frontline healthcare workers who are putting their personal safety on the line to confront COVID-19. Just a few weeks into this month-long initiative, we're knocking on the door of our goal. We are so grateful for your support. Thanks to our partners at Direct Relief, these donations will find their way into the hands of heroes all around the world. The parade of Bungie bounties will continue to raise awareness for how this community is doing more than staying at home and waiting for this whole thing to blow over. Here's who you can expect on the hunt in the coming weeks. And then they list a bunch of people that are going to be participating in the Bungie bounties. And on the final day, it's Kind of Funny and What's Good Games at 12 p.m. Pacific time on May 8th. So that is not this Friday when the show is published, but the following Friday on May 8th at 12 p.m. Pacific time. We'll be streaming for a couple of hours. Essentially, just to wrap it up so you guys can, if you want to get all of the details, of course, just go to Bungie.net. But if people matchmake against Greg and I in the Crucible and they eliminate us or they beat us in the round, they get a special emblem in the game. It's part of the bounty. And so, essentially, we're not going to be throwing every match. But if we did, then everybody would get the emblem.
It would be for the greater good.
Exactly. But here's the thing. Greg hasn't played in a really long time, so I think we're going to be on the struggle bus anyway. But CJ Gibson, if you guys remember him from his days at Fireteam Chat, who now works at Bungie, is going to be playing with us. And I think Fran is going to be streaming along with us, but because he is going to be participating in a Bungie bounty with his old Fireteam Chat cohorts, I don't think he's going to be participating in the specialty emblem with us. Regardless, we're going to be raising money for healthcare workers to help combat COVID-19 around the world, and we're going to have some fun. So hopefully you guys will join us. And a big shout out and thanks to Bungie for coordinating this. I think it's a really great initiative. And then another announcement, Friday, May 15th, we're going to be appearing on Animal Talking, Gary Whitta's new talk show, which we're going to be talking about a little later in the show, because the following day is the What's Good Games third anniversary on Saturday, May 16th, starting at 12 p.m. Pacific time. Brittany, what's happening that day? Anything cool?
There's a lot of cool things that are happening. One of those things is I just want to give a big thanks to all the kids and the adults and the humans. And we didn't get any dogs, unfortunately, that submitted any videos. But we've been asking for people to send their videos in for a fun compilation video we're going to be making. And we got a large amount of submissions. And
yay!
Yeah, it was really exciting. And I was looking through a few of them. And I want to give everyone kudos on the lighting. You guys picked really good lighting. You talked very clearly. I'm very proud of all of you. And just watching people and listening to them talk about, you know, what they love about What's Good and some of our little like inside jokes. I got a little emotional, and then I had to stop watching because I also don't want to watch all of them because I would love it if it could be a surprise for some of us too, you know, as we're watching to be like,
yeah. Oh, yeah, I see. Really cool. I see what you mean. Yeah.
Yeah. But they're really great. And we're going to be streaming, playing some games, drinking, having some Q&A. It's going to be a really fun day to celebrate.
Dude, I'm so ready. Of course, in case anybody was wondering, yes, Miss Rihanna Manuel will be joining us. It's going to be awesome. We were originally going to, of course, do it here in the studio, but because shelter in place has been extended, we shall not do that. Instead, we will do it separately, but together. You know, alone, together, but together.
But separate.
Alone together. Yes.
Exactly.
Yeah. You guys forgot my ice cream next week. You skipped right over me.
Oh, no. Oh, no, sweetheart. I was saving the best for last.
Oh, I feel special now. I thought I was going chronologically, but I guess time has no meaning anymore anyway, so it's fine.
Well, I was growing chronologically for the announcements, but the reason why I saved the best for last is because people need to know how amazing you are at streaming dating sims.
Oh.
And if you joined us for the Patreon stream, for our After Hours stream, you saw us start our adventure in Later Daters, and Steimer is going to continue and finish the adventure in Later Daters on her birthday.
Yeah.
Next Wednesday, May 6th, is Steimer's birthday, and she's going to stream for you, and Brittany and I are going to join her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I took the day off work, but we're in shelter in place, so I can't go anywhere. So what better way to celebrate than with all of my internet friends?
Oh, for sure.
And I'm playing excited. A dating sim, which I love. So
I think I'm going to make one of those cake in a boxes just for the event.
Yes,
which,
do it.
Which is a really big deal for me.
If you cooked anything, that would make me very happy.
She just means like cake in a box. You mean like a box of cake mix.
Yeah. Yeah. Cake in a box.
Mix.
You said a cake in a box.
It's a cake in a box.
I guess it technically is a cake. But in it's a not. Box. It's just the mix, though, because the cake is not made. Okay, never mind. It's fine.
Don't pull a stammer on me. Don't get all logical, okay? Don't need that from you, princess.
I won't. Thank you so much to this month's Patreon producers. Chewy's Godson, Alex Rogopoulos, Ferris Ate, Mohammed Mohammed, Marcus Brown, Punctified Amale, Bittner. And welcome to our Patreon community, McBeer Me. That's clever. I like that. Callum Smith, Maz Mikasa, Louis Creech, Dustin Lewis, and Trevor Franz. And Brittany, we've got some new podcast reviewers.
We do. The first one comes from Ibokui.
I saw this one.
Who says, I never thought I would willingly listen to Andrea talk by choice after all of my years managing GameStop, but her and the crew really have something special, and I'm here for it. I thought that was really funny.
Aw,
that is a compliment.
Thanks. I'll take the backhanded compliment.
It's backhanded, but I think the motivation is good. And then we also have a review from Stormin May, the lazy analyst. It's all bare bearings. And thank you all so much for your written 5-star reviews. They really help us in the little algorithm that are the SEO of podcasts and iTunes and everywhere else. And it helps people find our show. So thank you all so much. Appreciate it. And it's fun to read them and put some funny little quotes in here as well.
It is indeed. And on that note, let's get into the news. But before we do that, I want to tell you it's brought to you by ExpressVPN. Okay, so we all know how ExpressVPN protects your privacy and security online, right? But here's something you might not know. You can also use ExpressVPN to unlock movies and shows that are only available in other countries. Sneaky. I love it. Now that so many of us are stuck at home, it's only a matter of time until you run out of stuff to watch on Netflix. Let's be honest, we're all just browsing, yeah. And nothing looks good anymore. So this whole week, I've been using ExpressVPN to look for things in other territories because I've heard lots of good things about Studio Ghibli, and I even have a shirt that's a riff on My Neighbor Totoro, but I've actually never seen it. Boom. ExpressVPN lets me like kind of sneak my way into Japan Netflix by using their service, and so now I get to watch the movie. It's the best. You ladies have seen that movie, yes? No?
I actually haven't. I need to use ExpressVPN to log into a different Netflix so that I could do this exact same thing.
Help me get to Japan.
Girl, I will hook you up. Don't you worry. It's so simple. You just fire up It's so simple to do. You just fire up the ExpressVPN app, change your location to Japan or the UK if you want to watch Doctor Who or wherever, and then you refresh Netflix and boom, that's it. ExpressVPN hides your IP address and lets you control where you want sites to think you're located. You can choose from almost 100 different countries. So just think about all of the Netflix libraries you can go through. Love anime? Use ExpressVPN to access Japanese Netflix like we've been talking about. But it's not just Netflix, you guys. ExpressVPN works with any streaming service. Hulu, BBC iPlayer, YouTube, you name it. There are hundreds of VPNs out there, but the reason to use ExpressVPN to watch shows is that it's ridiculously fast. There's never any buffering or lag, and you can stream in HD with no problem. ExpressVPN is also compatible with all of your devices, phones, media consoles, smart TVs, and more. So you can watch what you want to on a personal device or on a big screen wherever you are. If you visit our special link right now at expressvpn.com/whatsgoodgames, you can get an extra 3 months of ExpressVPN for free. You heard that right. If you can not only get an extra 3 months of ExpressVPN for free, but you're supporting everything we do here at What's Good Games, plus watch what you want. Plus, you can just watch what you want. That's what I meant to say there. And, of course, protect yourself with ExpressVPN at expressvpn.com/whatsgoodgames. That's the key. You got to use the /whatsgoodgames so that ExpressVPN knows that we sent you and not some other podcast.
Mm-hmm,
thanks, everyone, for supporting all that we do. Now go watch some cool anime. Okay, ladies, I am so excited about this news.
I was going to try to hum some Viking music, but I don't even know what that would sound like.
It's like very chanty, though, Viking music, I feel like.
Beards and braids and stinky men. Oh, long beards and axes and gods.
It's pretty good. Yeah. You could be in the trailer right now. You could be the background for that trailer.
I feel like I need to bust out my Billy Goat beard as like my
Viking. Oh, yes.
Oh, shit. That's
you
totally,
gotta
yes.
Can you braid it?
It's your Britney Viking beard.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, put like a little pony here and then braid the rest of it.
Okay. I'll try to make
this
happen.
And then yell about Odin a little bit and you'll be good to go.
Okay. I got this.
Oh, Odin's son.
Okay, while we're watching Brittany braid her chin beard, I'm going to go ahead and start reading the story. So in case you missed it, Assassin's Creed Valhalla was announced this week. So we knew that something Nordic themed was coming down the pipe for Assassin's Creed. We thought it was Ragnarok, which must have been. Okay, hold on. Let me just. Brittany, this is gold.
Odin!
I love
Why
you.
Would you forsake me, Odin?
Oh my god.
Okay.
You're the best, Brittany.
If you weren't already married, I would marry your ass.
Girl. Marriage doesn't mean shit.
It's perfect. It's perfect. So anyway, it's officially announced. It's coming holiday 2020 for PC on Epic Games Store and Steam, for PlayStation 4 and PlayStation 5, for Xbox One and Xbox Series X and Stadia. So that's definitely a lot of places to play. Xbox got out in front and said, yes, this is going to be part of smart delivery, which means that if you buy it for Xbox One, you will get to play it for free when you buy an Xbox Series X, and vice versa. If you buy it for Xbox Series X, you can take that copy to your Xbox One and play it there. The why you would do that is unclear. Maybe somebody is borrowing your Series X, or maybe you are a multi-Xbox household and the Xbox One is in one room and the Series X is in another. I don't know. Anyway, the good news is that if you buy it in one place with Xbox, you can have it for free on both. And I assume PlayStation is going to match that, because it would be crazy if they didn't, but they haven't announced if they are or not. Anywho, continuing on, here are some fast facts that I've compiled. The time period is set in 873 AD is when the main story begins. That is when England is a land but not a country, and is made up of several individual kingdoms with many different kings that rule over parts of it. Their hero is named Eivor, and I have Eivor like Cravor because it's actually E-I, so I wanted to get the pronunciation in there. It's kind of like when Bayek first became a thing, and we were all calling him Bayek because Bayek.
It's because he was Bay.
Mm-hmm. He was definitely Bay. The male and female option, like they had in Odyssey Returns, so you will be able to play a female or a male Eivor. The Hidden Blade is back, and if you watch Yusuf do the Ubisoft official breakdown of the trailer, he points out that it's top-mounted this time instead of mounted underneath, which is a nice little touch, and they
that
go into the details
safer
about that.
If you're thinking logistically.
Yeah, right?
You don't want to accidentally slice off your own finger underneath.
True, but depending on the style of your bracer, it might be harder to hide the blade on the top versus hiding the blade underneath.
Totally.
Would be my guess. But yeah, you're right. It's definitely safer. You're not slitting your own wrist by accident. ships are back, which we anticipated, and it looks like boarding ships and ship battles are back as well. Conquests are back. Well, at least it very heavily indicates the conquests are back. We are going to run across the Assassins and the Templars, or in this time period, as they're known, the Hidden Ones in the Order of the Ancients. And they are going to continue the present day journey and continue Layla's journey as well. Creative director Ashraf Ismail said that we have some surprising yet unexpected content for our players who love that kind of stuff. But of course, it's not going into any detail. And just as a reminder, Ashraf, if you haven't seen any of the interviews he's done, I've interviewed him so many times over the course of his career at Ubisoft. He was the game director on both Assassin's Creed Origins and Assassin's Creed 4 Black Flag, two of my favorite ACs. And Darby McDivitt is back. He this time is the narrative director. He previously was the lead writer for Black Flag, Revelations, and Embers. So seasoned team at the helm for Assassin's Creed Valhalla. So there was a couple of outlets, a very select few outlets that got to do interviews ahead of the announcement. And the one that I pulled from was Game Informer. They do such a great job with their features that I really like the interview that they did with Ash. So I'm just going to read a couple of excerpts from him. He said, "There's a lot that I can't get into for spoiler reasons, but overall, the idea is of this place is But the overall idea of this place of glory that you're trying to reach. This is very meaningful to the personal journey of our hero, Eivor. Eivor is a Viking raider who will leave Norway for the rolling hills of England. This is something that happens very early in the journey of our game for the goal of settling their people and building a thriving settlement. Norway is beautiful, but it was a very harsh place to live. There's war, there's a lack of space to grow. The idea of finding a better place to thrive was very important. The thing we've tried to balance there in the identity of Eivor is someone who is a lone wolf, who has ambition and glory they want to achieve for themselves, but they also have a community that needs them. We kind of play off this balance. At what point does your ambition override the needs of other people? This is a little bit more into the personal journey of Eivor, so the name Valhalla is significant to that journey in terms of this ambition. I can't get into the elements beyond that, aside from it being a very iconic Norse term and place." Then he continues talking about the setting for the game. And again, if you want to read the entire interview, I highly encourage you to go to gameinformer.com and do so. Saying, "It's Norway and the Dark Ages of England, specifically the 9th century. In terms of England, it's quite a large map. We focus on four major kingdoms, Wessex, Northumbria, East Anglia, I think it's Angela, and Mercia. So for history buffs, they can look for that. It's a large part of England, and within that you have three major cities, London, Winchester, and Jorvik, now called York in modern days, but Jorvik back then. And we have a ton of towns, and of course we have Norway as well, which is really cool. That's the core. We have other surprises that I won't get into in terms of the world and the map, but that's the heart of the journey. We start in Norway, and we see the natural beauty of the world, but we also feel the difficulty of living in this barren land. So we move from there and settle into England, and then it's about the journey through the kingdoms of England, and of course players can go back and forth to Norway as they please, which is interesting. So open world returns, which we've seen in the last couple ACs, and then of course the ships. The Vikings are known for their ships, so in order to succeed and start thriving, players will go on raids. They'll raid their enemies, but to raid you need a long ship. And I love that in every interview that Ash did, he called it the Ferrari of ships. So he said you'll have a long ship and a crew. These are characters that you're going to meet in the world, much like we did in Odyssey. Characters you go on journeys with, and there are characters you can customize and build as well. They're called Yum's Vikings, which is interesting. So a lot of effort has gone into your raiders, and these are people who also live in your settlement. Beyond raiding, there are assaults. Assaults are attacks on giant fortifications. There are big set piece moments that are wrapped into the narrative. And this is something we found in our research that happened quite a lot. So we needed to find a place for that in the game and give it a lot of value and make it shine. These are really incredible battles. And in his video that he did with Yusuf on the Ubisoft YouTube page, he talked a lot about the epic scale of some of these battles, which was really exciting. And then on combat, I'm almost to the end of this, guys.
This is good.
It says that we can't claim to create the ultimate Viking experience if we don't nail combat. So combat is visceral and brutal. We made sure that every swing of an axe, every defense with a shield feels good. A lot of effort has gone into the weaponry of the period, into the enemies. You can't have a good fight system if the enemies don't shine, so we have a lot of variety in enemies, which is something that has been a major criticism in the combat of the Assassin's Creed franchise in the past, which we'll get into later. A new take on progression and gear. We've pushed every single envelope to deliver the Viking experience. He also mentioned that there's dual wielding has been confirmed, and if you want to, you can dual wield two shields. I'm not sure how that would work.
Just bash the shit out of everybody.
Yep, exactly. If you really like to get up close and personal, shield bros is for you. And use words like visceral, crunchy, brutal, weighty, and then of course the RPG elements. So this has been something that I've really loved to see the franchise delve into, but I know some purists of the franchise are very upset that it feels like it's turned into just like an action RPG instead of more of a stealth action game. So the RPG elements are back and, of course, more fleshed out than they ever have been before. The way the gear works is completely revamped. Every piece of gear you find is unique. You can upgrade each piece of gear. If you wish to carry the same piece of gear to the end of the game, you can.
Yeah.
Or if you want to collect everything, that's up to you. Everything has its own unique value. At a certain point, you can start to customize your gear. Players have this quite large, he mentioned, skill graph that they can sort of traverse through the journey of Eivor, picking up new skills, picking up a lot of playstyle elements to fine-tune the Viking you are. I'm sure we'll hear more about that later, and it includes everything from abilities to skills to weaponry. We have a new, fresh take on progression that we feel is anchored in the world and the Viking fantasy we're trying to achieve.
Oh, God. It sounds good. And something else IGN had talked about in their feature as well was the settlement. And I'm not familiar with the settlements in the Assassin's Creed games, but I'm sure you ladies are because you've played more of them than I have.
Yeah, so I intentionally left out the settlement stuff from the Game Informer article because it was just a lot. And I have a feeling that we're going to hear a lot more about that in the coming months. But I like that it's part of Assassin's Creed because it never really was before. I mean, there are moments where you have your brotherhood establishments and you have to do some minor upgrading, but it was never like a key cornerstone is maybe the word I'm looking for, mm-hmm. as part of the RPG progression. I mean, most of the RPG elements that they built in over the course of the franchise really focused on your assassin and not the brotherhood or the, you know, people around you. They just really supplemented you as a character. So I'm really curious to see how that's going to play out. Because part of me feels like this franchise was already suffering from a little bit of map fatigue in things like there was just too many things on the map to do that it was overwhelming and it didn't seem focused enough. And I know that some people really love that. And I think that's what's the struggle here and something that I've talked to several Ubisoft teams about because this is definitely like a very core Ubisoft thing, right? Like, oh, every game seems to have like a bazillion things to do. You like look at all the collectibles in The Division, or you look at all the towers you have to get in Far Cry, you know, and you think about all the shanties you had to collect in Assassin's Creed Black Flag, right? It just feels like there's a lot of busy work in a lot of Ubisoft games. And I talked to the team about that because I've had the pleasure and privilege of working with several Ubisoft teams over the course of my career. And every time I talk to the teams about them, they're like, you would be so surprised by how many people get upset when we take that stuff out of the game.
I'm surprised by it because people complain about shit that they don't actually do. Like, I feel like you would be like, yeah, they'll complain about it, but then if you actually look at percentage completion, I'm sure it's abysmal for a lot of it, right? So
it is, because you look just, at the it's achievements, about yeah.
The humanistic thing of like, you can't take anything away from me. If you take something away from me, you're a bad person. It's not about like, it's, and it's weird because I'm like, well, you need to edit. Editing is a thing.
Yeah.
Let them edit their work. But it's like, no, if one thing was ever in there, I can see their reluctance to take it out. That being said, having watched this trailer and having listened to you now, Andrea, talk about this, I actually don't know how excited I am about it. Only because of what you just mentioned. It feels like there's still going to be a lot of map fatigue. I don't love that I need to raid or do assaults, especially on ships. Like, no, thank you. I don't want to play Skull and Bones. Like, that is a different game for a different person. I want to just run around with my double axes and like murder some fools. Like, that sounds cool. So I mean, obviously this is very like the first big reveal of the game. So I'm not dismissing it entirely. I am just saying I definitely want to see a little bit more and maybe something that would appeal to more of me as a gamer. Like, for instance, who do I get to sleep with in this game? Can we go sleep with some old lady?
Where's that side quest? You're going to be able to be banging people again.
I know. I'm like, that was the so Vikings popular. Are like, come on.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm with you, Simon. I think it kind of comes down to what do I have to do versus like what's a fun side thing I can do. And Because I still have never finished an Assassin's Creed game. I just have fatigued every single time. And I've enjoyed all the time I've spent with them. But then at one point, I'm just like, okay, I'm done. And I thought for sure that Odyssey would have been like the first one I finished. But again, map fatigue's a thing. But this, like, I was reading, like, this village stuff, for example. It sounds like it's actually going to have purpose and meaning, and you're going to feel like this is your custom settlement that you're building. And to me, that gets me really excited. But I'm with you with the shit battles. I don't want to have to do that. And raids sound like I'll try it once or twice. But if it's integral to the progression of the game, I think that's when I'm going to start, like...
Yeah, that's what worries me. It's like, if you need that in order to build up, you know, your resources or whatever for that settlement, it's like a very core integral part of the gameplay loop, I'm going to be sad. I'm not going to like it.
But it looks so good otherwise right now. This is right up my alley.
Honestly, the trailer made me a little queasy. I'm not going to lie.
What, from too violent?
Too violent.
Oh.
It was pretty
gruesome. I mean, I think when you think back to how far back, because this is, I mean, next to Origins, this is very, very early in human history, right? So I think that, you know, it's important to remember that Ubisoft teams excel at taking inspiration from historical data, and they do a lot of deep historical research. But of course, they're blending that with fantasy, right? And Assassin's Creed has always been a very violent franchise. But that being said, we brought this issue up after Brittany and I played the latest Mortal Kombat when we went to Mortal Kombat 11. The more advancements we get in animation and art, the more realistic it looks. And the closer you get to realism, the more uneasy it makes me personally. And I know other people feel the same way. And so sometimes when you get this trailer, which was very beautifully animated, right? This is like a full-blown like CG trailer that that Assassin's Creed is great at doing, at instilling, like, you know, excitement around the franchise. We're going to get a gameplay reveal, which we're going to talk about a little bit later next week in the Inside Xbox reveal, where they announced some other stuff. But I'm with you that I am concerned about all of the rating specifically. When I read some of these deep dive interviews, I was like, oh no, because I was really hoping that they were going to lean into the more mythological aspects and go more fantasy instead of leaning into the more violent. Because, like, here's my thing. Like, I know that in the trailer they have, like, this one king, clearly an English king, who is talking and demonizing the Vikings, and then they're editorializing the Vikings as being people who can discern that they don't just go in and kill everybody in a village. They'll spare women and children, and they have women and children of their own, so they have hearts and things like that. They're not just pure killing machines. And it's like, yeah, but when you use a term like raiding, that means that they're literally going in and taking things that belong to other people to take them for themselves.
They're stealing and
shit. That Viking life,
exactly,
man.
Which is fine. It's what they did. It's not wrong.
I can tell you all about that Viking life. Well, something else too is, I don't know if you ladies remember, but one of the rumors with this game is that it's going to feature, and I don't know if any of the interviews talked about this, drop-in, drop-out co-op. And so, if there are these raids,
wait, where did you see that?
It was part of the leaks that happened. Oh, I don't know when.
Wait. So that's a leaked feature that's not confirmed.
Oh no, definitely not confirmed. It's one of the rumors / things that was leaked right around the time that everything.
That sounds wild to me that they would try to do drop in, drop out co-op for an RPG of this scale, but.
Who knows? Maybe there's some multiplayer involved. So if that's the case, if there are these raids, maybe that could be. I mean, that would make sense for, like, a multiplayer feature, right? In which case,
taking
the, you know, even longer stretch, it probably wouldn't be something that's required. But, I mean, hopefully through the game loop. Anyway, yeah, exciting. I'm excited to see the full shebang. I think this is the one that, the setting that I'm most excited about. I was really excited about Odyssey and obviously Origins with being, you know, pyramids and whatnot. But this Norse shit, it's my jam.
I would be lying if I didn't say that the reason I'm really excited is because God of War made me more excited about Norse mythology.
That's fair.
It started with Marvel's Thor series and seeing, you know, some of the more comic book styled Norse mythology. And then God of War came out and I was like, okay, now I'm all the way into learning about Norse mythology. And then when we heard the rumors about Assassin's Creed Ragnarok, I was like, okay, knowing just how dedicated Ubisoft teams are to their historical research after just even looking at the Assassin's Creed franchise, not to mention all of their other franchises, I was like, okay, now I'm all the way in. So I'm with you, Britt, that I'm very excited about where this could go, but I'm with you, Stimer, also. that it looks like they may be biting off a little bit more than they could chew.
Oh, yeah.
So it's actually interesting that it was leaked as Ragnarok, which is like the end times for Vikings, but then the game's name is Valhalla, which is like heaven for Vikings.
You clever girl.
So I'm like, all right. I don't know if they just were like, oh, fuck, we better change the name because somebody figured it out. Or if that was a really poor code name. Because usually code names are absolutely unrelated.
Bonkers,
it's
yeah.
like, it's code name shoe. Like, it's something completely abstract that you would never be able to discern one from the other. So I cannot imagine that Ragnarok was ever a code name for this game. I just think it would be weird. I guess it could have been a working title, but that was a bit of an odd one. I had another point, but I completely forgot. So,
Go ahead.
I was going to say, the one thing that I think that they're going to struggle with from me and from you and from everybody who is now really enjoying Norse things from other properties, from other mediums, like the Marvel movies or like God of War, is does my fucking axe ricochet back to me? Because if it doesn't, it's not going to be as satisfying. I want That's that funny. Boomerang shit like Thor. I want to be Thor.
So they did confirm that you can throw your axe at a certain point of RPG progression, but we haven't seen what that looks like and if the axe is going to come back to you. I would guess that the axe is not going to come back to you because you're not a mythological being. You're just a dude, but it's not going to feel as good.
Don't you think though? Like if I'm a player and I'm like, I loved God of War and I love Viking shit. Oh my God. Maybe I've not really played an Assassin's Creed for a while or at all. And this, Valhalla, great. This sounds similar to the thing I really liked. Go in there, and then I'm like, why can't I throw my axe? Why does my axe not come back to me?
That, you know, Simon, I'm with you. In the trailer, Odin's there. He turns into a crow. Why can't an axe come back to you?
Exactly. See? If you can be a crow, if you can be one of Odin's crows.
Or whatever the hell that
Maybe
was.
Maybe there'll be some kind of pulley system attached to your hidden blade.
Are there ravens? I actually think Odin's ravens and not crows, but
They are ravens. Odin's ravens.
Yeah, it's ravens, yeah.
But like eagles are part of the assassin's lore, right? So there's going to be some kind of overlap there, I would guess.
I wonder if Eivor could find a bungee cord and just attach it to their axe. Just like...
No, that's what I'm saying, right? Like, imagine there's, like, a pulley system in the hidden blade, right?
Oh, my God, hilarious. Yeah.
Where you're just like... It's like the cord on the vacuum. You just, like, hit the button and it, like...
Or they can just be like, fucking Odin, bring me my axe. Oh, yeah. Okay, great.
And then
that would be lore-breaking in a way that I don't think Assassin's Creed would do. Like,
I don't know the lore of Assassin's Creed well enough because I've never
None of the assassins
anymore.
Have had these kind of magical powers. I mean, obviously, like, don't freak out, everybody. We know that the whole game is fantasy, right? There's a lot of fantasy involved.
Oh,
but
my
like,
God. What are you
saying? Assassins
mean?
Don't have magic. They don't have magic, right? It's not like they can, like, throw... like spells or anything like that. So
my one pet peeve about Assassin's Creed, where's my fucking magic?
I mean, like it's just part of the franchise is that there's just not magic. You're not magical. You're a person.
This is why I don't finish these games. I'm like, where's my
That's
spell?
Fine.
Well, the first was like the first game back when they were more stealthy was like, I'm irritated at the amount I have to stealth through this. I feel like I have to fucking walk with my hood on 95% of the time, and that's just not fun. And now it is more action oriented, but when I want to go action oriented, I want like to throw a spell at you and fire a gun and slice a sword. Like, I want to do all the things. I want to mix and match.
You want to be a Viking with the ability to cast fireballs, what you're saying?
Yes, because it's why not? And I know that the answer is because it's Assassin's Creed, but I don't care.
I could make a case that there's a lot of tools that you get in the RPG progression, particularly with Odyssey and Origins, that do make it a little bit more of a varied combat experience, so it doesn't just feel like it's all hand-to-hand. But I don't think that you would care anyway. I think you just want to be a wizard.
I do. I really do like being a wizard. I mean, this is more of just this is a stupid minor tangent.
No, but it's okay to have a preference. It's okay to be like, yo, like... This game, this franchise just isn't for me. Just like Persona just isn't for me. That's okay.
I'll still play a decent chunk of this, but I'll probably play like 20 hours of it and then be like, okay, I'm done.
Yeah, same. But I will enjoy those 20 hours. Going back off this little rumor mill real quick, part of the leaks that happened, which got a lot of this stuff right. It sounds like there are going to be more weapon types and they can be upgraded with runes, which give them special abilities for certain groups of weapons. And rather
runes are magic.
Rather than adrenaline, players can activate a berserker mode that also activates rune powers based on elemental types, lightning, fire, and frost.
Magic!
Magic,
it's
bitches.
Motherfucking magic.
It's fucking okay. magic coming okay. to Assassin's Creed.
If they add ruins and bring in elemental, I'm down.
Yeah.
Oh my god, that would make. I hope that leak is true, but I guess we'll see. Time will tell.
Yeah. Can we move on? My chin's getting very itchy.
Yeah. Please. Well, you also don't need
to keep that in. But yes, we can definitely move on.
Committed. Oh no. Oh god. Oh. God.
All right, Stimer. Would you please read this one?
Of course. So Fortnite's Party Royale mode adds a map, removes a building and weapons. Wait, does it remove a building and remove weapons? Sure.
Removes building.
You probably don't have to read this whole thing, by the way.
Fantastic. I will see. Damn it, the speech jammer thing is happening.
I know.
Skype, really why you do me like this?
Do you need me to read it?
No, it's very light. I think I can make it through. All right, Fortnite's latest mode is now live in the game. The Party Royale mode features a small new island map. Instead of building and shooting, players go fishing, do time trials, and just hang out. Party Royale's in-game description reads as, all chill, no sweat. There are no weapons or building. Instead, the mode is described as a place to, quote, hang out with friends. There's no storm circle or time limit. Vending machines dispense free, non-damaging items like paint guns and grenades. Grenades, definitely not. I think they mean like paint grenades, because regular grenades would definitely blow you up.
That's very damaging, yeah.
Tomatoes you can throw, fishing poles, and a bow that shoots plungers. The Party Royale map is small but busy, decked out in bright colors and flashing lights. There's a concert arena, a soccer pitch, a movie theater, and places to skydive or race vehicles. In addition to Party Royale, Fortnite also got a new spy game called Payload. It's basically an Overwatch payload map in Fortnite. So one team escorts a car along a path while the other team tries to stop them, and they switch places for four rounds.
So yesterday when I was putting the show notes together, it was just going to be Stammer and I. And as we all know, when it's just two people doing a show, sometimes you need a lot of stuff to talk about. So this article originally was a bit longer, but essentially the author was just talking about their time running around. And I thought this was a really cool thing. I'm always just fascinated with what Fortnite... I have one of my chin beard hairs on my microphone. What Fortnite does, and I think this just, it makes a lot of sense, actually. You know, right now, and I think everyone just kind of wants to chill out and hang out in virtual spaces. You look at the Travis Scott concert that just happened, for example. Why not just create a fun hub where people can just run around and apparently throw paint grenades at people?
Right. Yeah, I mean, Fortnite is now, very safe to say, a cultural phenomenon, right? Like, it's not a video 100%. Game anymore. It has permeated... so many people's lives. So I think it's really smart of them to be like, if you are somebody who, if you want to log in with your friends, but maybe right now it's too intense for you to go into Battle Royale, or maybe you're tired or whatever, you can just have a chill space to go and do some other goofy shit. Because it still all feels like Fortnite, which is nice. Mm-hmm.
What's that VR chat that was really popular? It probably still is really popular, too. Where you just essentially put on your VR headset and you just chat with people, but it kind of gives
you... You talking about Second Life?
Maybe.
No, Second Life was like an...
It's like VR chat, but this kind of reminds me of the same thing. You don't even really need to play games or even be interested at all in, you know, the Battle Royale mode of it. It's free. So maybe, you know, your cousin Susie Q or your grandpa Ed wants to chat.
Honestly, it's a great idea for families looking to connect with the younger generation who are like, hey, like my okay motorcycle, we get it, you're here.
I heard that.
If you're looking, like my cousin who plays a lot of Fortnite, but like his mom doesn't know what the fuck it is, or like, you know, his dad doesn't really know how to play it, but they could still possibly go in and go somewhere like this and be like, mom, dad, like, just come here to me, no one's gonna shoot you here, like you can actually live. It's less... It's more chill. I think it's a good idea.
I thought it was really cool. Yes. Good job, Fortnite. Once again, indeed. You did a really good thing.
All right, Britt.
Okay. Dying Light to get Hellraid DLC this summer via Eurogamer. So Dying Light is getting a Hellraid DLC this summer, Techland has announced. Hellraid is the on-hold first-person fantasy game pitched as a mashup of The Elder Scrolls and Dying Light and the spiritual successor to Hexen and Witchhaven. It was initially planned for release on PC, PS3, and Xbox 360 back in 2013, but it was delayed to launch on PS4, Xbox One in 2014. Then in 2015, it was delayed indefinitely. The official blurb reads, Dying Light's new DLC Hellraid will be your ticket to hell and back. No, it's not a metaphor. You will be literally hacking through demonic hordes of hell. It all started with an arcade machine survivors found in the tower's basement while investigating an odd power outage. None of them could remember seeing this strange device before. They moved it upstairs, unaware of its true nature. kind of reminds me of Samara from The Ring. That little bitch leaves her VHS tape everywhere and then people get sick. Anyway, this is exciting. I saw this game in 2014 at E3. And I still remember thinking it looked like a mashup of exactly what they said, like Skyrim and Dying Light, with a little bit of Warhammer Chaosbane. And it just looked like a fucking amazing game. It's all medieval setting, and it's classless, meaning you can be someone who wields a sword and shield, but also if you want to be like Steimer and use magic, you can use magic at the same time. You can do both. And I thought it was really neat that this game is coming back. It was one of my favorite things I saw 6 years ago at E3. And it sounds like, though, that this is just going to be... My interpretation of this is that Hellraid is still on hold. That this isn't a continuation of that project. But what this could be is that Hellraid initially was going to have a story mode and a mission mode and then an arena mode. And it sounds like this could be the arena mode, which is a little bit of a bummer because the story mode looked really exciting and you could play with up to 4 people co-op as well. And anyway, it's just cool that it's coming back and I wanted to talk about it and I'm happy it's here. It only took 6 years, but here we are.
Good things come to those who wait.
There we go.
No, but like, in what world does Techland think that it's a good thing to make a PR beat about DLC for Dying Light when they delayed Dying Light 2? Like, that game was supposed to be out,
yeah.
And now we have no idea what's happening with Dying Light 2, a game that they've been talking about for a couple of years now, and now instead they're like, yo, we're still just not talking about our giant blockbuster open world thing that we showed. We're just going to go straight into talking about DLC for our old game? I'm really perplexed by this decision.
I'll see if not I can
to
help
say n- not to say anything about the content itself, because this does sound really cool. I just don't understand what the strategy here is as to what's happening at Techland.
Yeah, so
and what's happening with Dying Light 2.
Dying Light still has a lot of people who play it. It's a very, like, it has a really great online community, so it's still very popular. And Techland has constantly and consistently updated their online mode with new events, and they just did something for Easter a couple weeks ago. So to me, this makes sense. I think they have obviously two separate teams, one who is still supporting their current community, and then obviously the folks who are working on Dying Light 2. So I understand if you're not following the game that this probably seems like you are announcing DLC for your game that came out in 2015. That's weird, but maybe the messaging could have been a little bit better on their end. But that's why, to me, it wasn't like that wasn't my first reaction. It was like, okay,
I don't know. I'm looking at Steam charts, and like over the last year, like the average daily players is like 5,000
on Steam. I don't know if that's the only one.
I mean, obviously people are playing in other places too, right? They're playing on console, but like, I mean, I would guess that, I mean, anecdotally, of course, I would need to actually go pull data. So this is just anecdotal.
Yeah.
That people that play games that are very old generally play them on PC because PC builds are just better suited to handle that for a variety of reasons, because consoles just like, pushing updates to console is a pain in the butt from the developer side. So I would guess that the most people that are playing would be playing on PC. And so I see this and go, these numbers are like nothing to like write home about. Not to say that they're not still supporting the game. I think my confusion is like, why now? Why talk about this now? Why not give us an update? Also, like, oh, by the way, in addition to like, we're super excited to be still supporting our original game, let us give you a brief update since there's not going to be an E3 and Techland is not going to be doing probably a standalone event, just a thought. So it's like, well, what's going to happen with Dying Light 2? Because that game was supposed to be out and now it's not. We have no idea when it's coming out. And it was one of the games we were most excited about last year.
I bet we'll see Dying Light 2 next week at Xbox's event. Because it's all third party.
The Series X event?
Mm-hmm.
Do you think it's going to come out fall 2020?
Oh, God.
That could be a new date that they put out, and then we'll see if they hit it or not.
Yeah, I mean that's why it would... Well,
I'm not wrong.
That would make sense if they're... Because I'm with you, too, Andrea. If they're going to announce DLC for this, but not talk about Dying Light 2, it would make sense that they would announce this if they have plans to talk about Dying Light 2 imminently. And next week would be pretty imminent.
I mean, I do see what Andrew's saying. Just in general, this seems like a little bit of a head scratcher to even happen at all. Like, why? Like, I think you maybe missed your moment, and maybe just put it as a DLC for the for Dying Light 2 if you really want to do something with this content you've already made. But whatever. I mean, I hope some people play it. I hope they get a return on it, and I hope we hear more about Dying Light 2 soon.
You know, that's very nice of you to say, Simer. That was very well said. Yeah, I think it just comes down to my guess is that Hellraid will probably never see full development like it was originally intended, and they probably just have this content, this build of maybe the arena mode, and they're thinking, okay, like, what can we do to like keep adding content to Dying Light to hold them over until Dying Light 2? Maybe they just tack it on to that, because it's really weird that all of a sudden it's getting brought back up 5 years later, but it is. So cool, we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we'll wait and see next week. And if they aren't part of the Series X announcement, I'm going to be like,
that's going to be hell? Even, yeah, it's going to be a little weird.
I'll probably just, I would just assume that they ran out of money and they have to release DLC hopefully in an effort to raise money so that they can finish the development. Because
I don't think it's that.
That would make sense.
I think it might be more of a Brittany said.
I hope it's not that. I really do. Because I was very excited about this game.
Working on this shit in the corner. We have it. I don't, what do we do with it? I don't know. I guess just put it out for Dying Light.
Like, film it yet.
That's more of what it feels like to me. Just like, what do we do with this thing that we have that we've technically spent time on? And we can either just scrap it and absolutely make zero return on our investment. Or we can just put it out and make probably nothing. But it might keep some people
like
happy.
That's such a terrible strategy.
It didn't say it was a good one.
The PR manager, Ola, she's lovely. I love her. She said, "We wanted to bring a piece of Hellraid to our community, and this is our way of sharing a bit of the dark fantasy world with them. We currently have no plans to resume development of Hellraid, and the game is still on hold." And then she goes on to confirm that they're still working on Dying Light 2 and an unannounced IP.
Yeah, so they basically just shit-canned one project. We're like, we'll take what we have of it, and we'll put it as DLC for this old thing.
Yeah.
That'll hopefully revive the people who were interested in Dying Light or interested in Dying Light 2, and we'll get them back in and a little bit more engaged so that when we do start talking about Dying Light 2, it doesn't feel like we've ignored them this entire time.
There you go.
Not that they have, because as Brittany said, apparently they've been supporting, but I'm not a Dying Light person, so I don't know all the things that they've done.
Yeah.
Okay, we just got to move on because I'm just flabbergasted reading this bullet point that says initially planned for release in 2013 on Xbox 360.
Girl, I know.
Remember
those days.
Back in the days, the Red Ring of Death would get you.
All right, moving on to a couple bullet points for in case you missed it. As we mentioned, the first Xbox Series X gameplay is happening next week. I am committing to doing a stream along. If either of you would like to join me, I would love to have you.
I think it's
exciting. It's Thursday, May 7th.
The time.
In the morning.
Time. Oh.
8 a.m., 9 a.m., 8 or 9 a.m.?
Aye. But yes, I'm down.
Let me double check now that you've asked.
I asked a question. It's going to be a thing.
I didn't write it down because I figured we would talk about it on social, but you're right. It's 8 a.m. Pacific time. Yeah, inside Xbox.
Okay.
Okay, that's not that early. Relax.
Girl, yeah, when you're an idol like me and your bedtime is 2 a.m., that's pretty early.
I believe in you, fair. Brittany.
Oh, I'll do it. I've done earlier. I'll be there. I'm just saying that's, you know, gotta give it a second.
As we also mentioned earlier, our friend Gary Whitta has launched a talk show in Animal Crossing, and it's actually pretty cool. So he's got a whole, like, late night talk show set up. He's got a friend of his named Nick who's doing the band, and they do music for people. He's had live performances, a bunch of guests. Don't forget to mark your calendars for Friday, May 19th at 9 a.m. Pacific time. We will be on the show. Deadly Premonition 2 is coming to Switch on July 10th for $50. Damn it, Nintendo.
I don't think that's Nintendo's fault, but
that's fine, man. I'm so excited.
It's fine. Everything's fine. I'm not going to buy it, but you can, and have a great time.
I will.
Google Stadia announced that some games are coming to their platform. Whee!
Yeah. So basically, they got PUBG, Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order coming this fall, Madden FIFA coming this winter. They have a few first on Stadia games, Kreta, Get Packed, Wave Break, Ember. They have Zombie Army 4, Octopath Traveler, and Rock of Ages 3, which is a tower defense game. Still nothing to get all excited about, I guess, unless you have a Stadia and you've never played these games before. Then I guess that's reason enough.
I mean, yeah, I think like the beat that they're missing, but it's also really hard to sell to gamers that already are embedded in this ecosystem, is that you don't have to pay anything now to get access to Stadia, because if you have a Gmail account, which is free to get, you can get Stadia for free. And so essentially they're allowing you access to play video games without having to buy a PC and without having to buy a console, right? Mm-hmm. So that's like Stadia's big pitch. But the problem is the library of games to play still is not great. And obviously right now the two standouts here are PUBG and Star Wars. And of course, you know, Madden and FIFA coming this winter. But coming this winter to me means like late November or December. Really December is what that sounds like to me. And Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order is just a year too late. You know, that game is great. You should definitely play it. But like if they release that game at full price on Stadia, it's going to be such a miss. But I can't imagine a world where either Disney, Lucasfilm, or EA is going to release that game on a new platform at a significant discount.
Yeah, I don't think they would, because they did announce that PUBG, if you're a Pioneer, or if you're a Stadia Pro member, you'll get the Pioneer Edition for free, which is $40. You think they would have also messaged the same with Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order, but maybe they're waiting for that PR beat back in September.
Or it's possible that EA is locked up in some other kind of agreement and they can't announce anything until later, because we know that EA has very specific deals in place for their Star Wars agreement. So it must have something to do with that, would
contracts.
Be my guess.
Yeah.
But yeah. Legalities. Business. But yeah, so Stadia, I still believe that you have not reached your full potential, but you have. You still
Stadia,
have time.
You're crawling. One day you'll walk.
Someday, Stadia, we will realize the magic of what you could become. Via Eurogamer, Nintendo's plans for its annual E3 broadcast have been pushed back due to complications arising from the coronavirus pandemic. Not shocking to anybody. VentureBeat first reported it, and sources have been able to corroborate to Eurogamer. I don't think that's surprising. There's also like no set dates for anything now that the ESA has confirmed that there's no digital coordinated E3 event. It's going to be every publisher for themselves. So I guess whenever you want to, Nintendo, you tell us what's happening. And this one, Brittany, I think you should read, because it is kind of funny.
This is sad but funny.
It's so bizarre. Okay, so Indivisible, in summer you played this, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But not on my Switch, obviously.
Not on your Switch,
out
right.
Yet.
So Indivisible launched on Nintendo Switch without the developers even knowing about it. So developer LabZero's project lead and lead designer Mac Zaymont posted this on Twitter earlier this week. And it was a photo of him holding a Switch with Indivisible on it. And he said, "Hey, that thing everyone wanted, Indivisible RPG, is out right now digitally for Switch in North America. Feel like you missed the announcement? You're not alone. Our team found out because people on Twitter sent us congratulations. I had no idea, but there it is. The Switch version of Indivisible itself is great. The porting group did seriously excellent work. Runs at a stable frame rate, even handheld. However, the old build was apparently not now released, doesn't have co-op, New Game Plus, or anything else recent. I checked myself. No release date announcement, no lead-up PR at all. It's missing current features like co-op. The eShop art is in the wrong image. Oh, is the wrong image. This launch does not represent the quality standards of LabZero. It just doesn't. I'm sorry. It wasn't us. But hey, it's 20% off."
This is like the saddest but also most hilarious tweet.
And basically, publisher 505 hasn't issued anything, and they just essentially said in Discord that they're going to look to see what happened. It's like, what the
fuck? This is a giant fail on Nintendo's part. Like, this to me is 100% Nintendo's fuck up.
You think so?
Like, yes, because there's no way that they should have certified a game that the publisher of the game did not sign off on.
Oh, here we go. Here's an article. 505 Games explains Indivisible's early launch on Nintendo Switch. This came out just last night, and this is via Nintendo Enthusiast. On the site, the blog post notes that the Switch release of Indivisible was a happy accident. Oh, I guess we're Bob Ross now. Due to an unexpected series of events. The post also reveals that the game had an internal release window for the month of May, with Indivisible on the Switch being based on an earlier build. An upcoming patch will add the following. And then it just blah, blah, blah. 505 Games then explained their digital-first approach in North America and Europe due to the ongoing coronavirus pandemic, while the publisher evaluates production for the da-da-da. Okay. That's no explanation at all.
Yeah, no, digital-first, so what? Like, that doesn't mean you can't push the features that have been added to the game since it launched on other platforms. Like, this is, like, somebody fucked up really bad here. Like, the idea that the developer is making this kind of a post and saying, like, literally, I checked myself. No lead-up PR at all. It's missing current features. It does not represent the quality standards of Lab Zero. That is indicative that somebody fucked up.
Oh, here yeah. we go. According 100%. To the publisher, this is via Eurogamer, its original intention was to launch Indivisible on April 28th. The build had passed QA and submission checks were approved, but it was later elected to delay till May. The last-minute decision was made, so Indivisible on Switch could launch alongside a day one patch. Unfortunately, the new launch date did not get changed within the release tool. This resulted in the game going live yesterday, to the surprise of everyone involved, including 505 Games.
That means it's still Nintendo's fucking.
It's still Nintendo's thing.
Yeah. It's literally somebody was like, oh, yeah, it's May. It's May. Okay, great. And then someone not following through and just updating the
That's
the thing.
Really funny.
I mean, we're all human. We all fuck up. But woof.
God. Woof. Maybe I guess do that with The Last of Us on PlayStation 4. Please.
I feel like we can say, okay, listen, there's no need for pitchforks. We're all working under extenuating circumstances. We're going to chalk it up to probably somebody on the publishing side of Nintendo who is pushing the button or sending the email to the engineering team or whoever on Nintendo's side makes it go live on the store and pushes the code live, just is working from home maybe, or doesn't have access, or there was a lack of communication, something went wrong. I like the thing to me that's a little disappointing is that Nintendo didn't step up and take responsibility and say, this is on us. You know, we of course want to work with our partners, blah blah blah, but they're Japanese, they probably never will.
They'll
probably never be like, it was our fault.
I feel like they've done that before, maybe not like this, but for other
Nintendo
things. Yeah,
I don't know. You know why? Probably because Nintendo very rarely makes mistakes like this. I think that's why it's so shocking, is that they're so buttoned up and they're so good at polish on every aspect of their business. That's why maybe this is so surprising and really quite funny. It's like,
I mean, it's not funny to whoever
Nintendo.
Did it, because I'm sure they may not have a job anymore. But
Nintendo, no.
Yeah. I guess I want someone to repeat this issue, but please do it for The Last of Us Part 2, please, before we all get spoiled of everything.
No. We do not want somebody accidentally pushing an old build of The Last of Us that doesn't have current features and for Naughty Dog to be like, we don't believe in this quality.
Of course not. No. If it's the final build, if the game's gone gold, if it's perfect, push that bitch live. That's all I'm saying. Blame it on whoever you want.
They'll push it live soon.
Whatever. I've already had it fucking spoiled for me. I'm mad about
it. I'm sorry.
That's all right. That happens.
Did we ban that person?
Oh, fuck yeah.
Good.
Thankfully, I caught it just a few minutes after someone posted it, so I don't know if anyone else saw it. Hopefully not.
I'm glad that you caught it so quickly. I'm sorry that happened to you. In case it wasn't clear for all of the people listening to the show or watching it YouTube, if you post spoilers of any kind in comments or in public spaces in What's Good Game community forums, you will be banned from our community.
And if you do that in general, you're a bad person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
You are.
I didn't recognize the commenter. Not that I know all the names, you know, have them all memorized, but I'm assuming what happened is someone just Googled The Last of Us Part 2 or searched for it in YouTube, found us via SEO, and then just, because it was literally just one line of spoilers and that was it. So, go fuck off, sir. Or ma'am.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't do that. You're bad.
You're
I hope
bad.
You have a bad day.
Yeah, go step in dog shit.
And bad diarrhea.
Yeah.
Have a bad day. On that note, let's all take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about what we've been playing. And it's true. You've heard correct. You've seen the streams. I am now playing Animal Crossing. We'll talk about that and more. See you in a minute. What's good, everybody, and welcome back. It's the second segment of the What's Good Games podcast, and normally this is where I would tell you that it's brought to you by patreon.com/whatsgoodgames, but we'll talk about that in the next segment because Brittany has some breaking news.
Yeah, this segment or this part is brought to you by facebook.com/group/whatsgoodgames because you see one Adam Twig posted a link in our Facebook group. And Pokemon releases officially licensed lingerie.
Wait, put it in the show notes.
Okay.
Because if you put it on the window, it'll show up on the thing and it'll be
Yeah. Okay, where are we at? I'll just put it right here. Okay. So I'm looking at an article, nerdbot.com, and it starts with, "Nothing makes us feel quite as cute and flirty as the undergarments we put on." Well, what if you could feel fun and flirty while representing your favorite fandom? So the thing I'm looking at is this Eevee bra and panty set.
I love this.
And there's little Eevees etched into the bra and panty. Oh my God.
This is so cute, I want to die.
Yeah, the embroidery on that is adorable.
It's so cute. It's not too Pokemon. This is everything I've ever wanted in life.
So let me describe it for people who are maybe confused. So the first set is a bra and panty set. It is like a sweetheart pink. It's like a light blush color, and it's got like a darker pink for the embroidery thread. It looks like it's got embroidery. Like from a distance, you would think it's more like a lace detail all along like the cups and the band of the bra and along the band of the panty. But if you look closer, the embroidery detail is actually little Eevees that are stitched into the bra and the panty.
And they have like a more just like a button down shirt and female boxer shorts. Like so for Jigglypuff. They've got like a couple different styles.
Yeah, the Jigglypuff one's a little bit difficult to see, but the Pikachu bralette is really cute. So it's like a yellow bralette with like red print, and then so you can see like Pikachu's little red circles. And it comes with a panty that has like lace on the leg holes. Ugh, this is a really cute. Is this Japan only though?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We have to use a third party site to buy anything and have it shipped here.
Help ExpressVPN.
Which I'm considering.
These are really cute.
This is just really, really cute.
The pajama set's really cute too. The little tee and short with the bow.
Although I'm upset because the apparently they've done a Sailor Moon one and I totally missed it. I would have loved Sailor Moon underwear.
eBay's your friend. Mm. I don't know if you want to buy underwear on eBay though.
No.
Oh yeah, no.
Suspect.
I'll go with no.
No.
Well, if you guys want to check it out, where can they go, Britt?
They can go to what do you want them to go to?
Go to the fan page. Look at the post on the fan page.
Yeah. They can go to facebook.com/group/whatsgoodgames. Submit a request to join our group. We only add those people who answer the questions because we curate our members of our pages. So just answer the questions. Just let us know that you know what What's Good Games is, and then we'll let you in.
Yeah.
It's great.
Do
you want to buy a watch? We have almost 2,500 members now on that page.
Nice.
That's amazing.
I know. It's such
Shout out to all of our mods doing God's work. Good job, mods and admins. We love you.
Yee.
Britt, why don't you start so then Summer and I can talk about Animal Crossing afterwards. So, spoilers, everybody. Britt's been playing more Yakuza.
I have.
Guess what I'm going to download after the show?
Yakuza. Are you going to say Yakuza 0?
Yeah.
Oh, yay! Okay, that's great. Yakuza 0 and Yakuza Kiwami is basically Yakuza 0 is like the prequel, but I would recommend playing that game first because I think it sets everyone up. In the sense that you get to know the characters, and then the characters you meet in that build off of. Because it's Yakuza 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. But Yakuza Kiwami and Kiwami 2 are remakes of Yakuza 1 and 2. So it's a good way to start. Anyway, yeah, so I just finished Yakuza 6 a couple hours ago, actually. And I'm still processing. There are some Yakuza spinoff titles that I would like to play. A few of them are Japan only, so My Japanese isn't good enough quite yet to play an all Japanese game, but I guess there are some fan translations. It's called Yakuza Ishin, which I think is like a samurai game, but featuring all of your favorite Yakuza characters. Anyway, I'm still processing. My plan is to make a video on youtube.com/whatsgoodgames coming up where I just kind of spoil the shit out of everything and just kind of blab and kind of word vomit how I feel, because I have a lot of feelings. This is the first time I've played 7 titles in a series back to back to back, and they all,
I mean, that's, you know, like I'm running a marathon. I feel like, dude, that's equivalent.
It's crazy. I never would have anticipated this, but it's interesting playing them one right after another, because, you know, there's some weird choices, and I haven't looked too much into the actual development style of this game or what, you know, the devs were going for. Maybe there's reasons why they cut some characters out and why they just didn't bring them back. Because you'll play a game and you'll spend, you know, like 10 to 15 hours with a character, and they have a very integral role in the story, and then they're just never spoken of or heard from again for the rest of the series. It's kind of weird, and maybe that wasn't so noticeable when the games were spaced out like they were. But again, my goal is to just kind of look into the development, look into some of the choices made, and maybe I'll have a better understanding, and then I just want to talk about it and just blab about it and process everything. But no, it's fantastic, and like I said, Yakuza 0 and Kiwami are on Game Pass right now, and you have no reason not to play them because they're really good.
So let's talk a little bit about why you think that you've gravitated towards this series so much. For people who are very unfamiliar with the Yakuza franchise, what about this game and games really kind of has grabbed you? So, like, just for people who don't know, they're kind of considered, would you dub them open world? They are mostly open world, right?
Sandbox.
Yeah, sandboxy. So they're like a action adventure with some RPG elements. It's kind of a mashup.
Yeah, so it's based off of, what's the actual city name? In Japan, the actual red light district. Kamuro? No. Oh.
You're talking about a section of Tokyo?
Yeah. Kabukicho is the real life entertainment and red light district of Tokyo, but in this game it's called Kamurocho. And yeah, it's several blocks of this red light district in Tokyo. And the first game, Yakuza 0, starts in 1985, and then the game ends in 2015. It's really good, Simon, trust me. It's really good.
No, I'm just sad at the year, because that's the year I was born.
Oh, well, you know.
Yeah, it's a great year. Like, it's one of the best. God,
I'm so old.
We got you, Stimes.
Yeah.
And there are a bunch of other cities you'll go to, like Sotenbori, I believe, which is the equivalent in Osaka. So it's basically, it takes all these iconic areas of Japan, these major cities, and it kind of gives them different names. But if you were to look at side-by-side comparisons of the fictional cities in Yakuza versus the actual cities, they look the same. You know, there's the same signs, the same bridges, the same rivers and whatnot. It's really neat. But something I think I really loved about it is, there's a lot, actually. Obviously, I played all 7 games back to back to back, and I'm not fatigued. I don't know how that happened. But first of all, like, I'm learning Japanese because I am fascinated by Japanese culture. I think it's just, it feels like a whole different world compared to the culture that I've known my whole life. So I'm fascinated for that sense. And these games are all in Japanese, and there are a lot of, obviously, cues taken from the culture in Japan. And to me, that was fascinating to watch and just kind of, you know, get the kind of gist of, you know, how, like, in the Yakuza, like, how the Yakuza work and kind of, like, the overall structure of that and what etiquette is like in Japan and just how different it is. And you see that translated into the game. So there's that. I loved reading the signs in Japanese and, like, translating them and hearing how they, you know, how when people spoke, like, the enunciations and whatnot of words I'm learning. So that was, like, my own, like, personal reason for that. But other than that, it's just such a well-done game with all of the characters and most of the story arcs. I mean, the game's not perfect. I'm not trying to pretend like it is. But it has this tongue-in-cheek charm about it, and it's really silly, but it has all these super serious moments, and, you know, there's character deaths, obviously, and really tragic things that happen, but at the same time, you could be singing karaoke over, and you're suddenly transported to a music video where you're wearing, like, a silly costume doing the disco. Like,
I feel like
so
you would
unique.
Gravitate towards, like, the weird shit in this game.
Yeah,
It gets funky.
It gets real funky.
Yeah, I haven't played any of the games. I have watched Greg play back in the day. And so that's when I was like, oh, I like this game, but I'm just watching you play this game. So now I'm like, okay, maybe it's my time to finally dive in myself and give it a go. Because I do think it has an element of charm to it that's a little bit difficult to pin down.
It really is. Yeah, it's hard to describe it, but it's, yeah, I just fucking love the series so, so much. And I originally played Yakuza 0 years ago, and I played for like 20 to 30 hours, and then I stopped. And then when Judgment came out last year, I played that, and then it reminded me, and I loved it. It was one of my favorite games of 2019, and then it reminded me of how much fun I did have with Yakuza 0 when I played it way back then. So after we got back from PAX, and I was sick with bronchitis, and I really couldn't do much, I thought, well, this is a good opportunity to hop back in. And then, I mean, obviously you see what happened over the course of 2 months. I've played all the games. But yeah,
so it's just how many hours would you estimate that you've spent with the franchise now?
Oh, geez. Well, okay, there's 7 games, and I think my shortest runtime was around 30 hours. So, and my longest runtime was maybe 70, and that might have been Yakuza 0 or Yakuza Kiwami. Can't remember.
So an average of 50.
Yeah, we could say an average of 40 to 50. So, you know, 50 times 7 is 350.
So, like, let's say 250 to 300 hours-ish ballpark.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. A lot
impressive.
A lot of late nights.
Considering I spent 300 hours on one game, I think that's a good distribution of time.
Thanks. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I'm just really excited. And obviously, we have Yakuza 7, which is called Like a Dragon, hopefully being localized this year.
Rawr.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I'm just...
Like a dragon.
Ooh.
Hey, so tell me about these. Tell me a little bit about some of the characters that you've really gravitated towards. The reason why I'm asking you these questions is because we know that you are excited about it, but I don't think in any of our talks about it have we really kind of dug into what about this game has really like made you stick around so much so that you've wanted to play every single game in the franchise.
Yeah.
Because the Yakuza series follows the same people for the most part through each of the games. Obviously there's additional characters that come in for each of the games, but
yeah,
the core cast is the same, right?
For the most part. Yeah, exactly. So you have Kiryu Kazuma, and he is the main character. You meet him in Zero, and he's in every game. And he is the main character. That's just the best way to put it. He's a main character. In some of the other games, you do have other characters, and the game's broken down into like 4 different sections, and each character has 5 chapters. And of course, like it all meshes together and intertwines into its own like story, and they all become bros. But I think the best way I can describe this is it's kind of like how people. I don't watch TV series that much unless it's Judge Judith Scheindlin, and then I'll watch that lady till the day I die. But, you know, it's kind of like in Game of Thrones, for example, because I did watch the first season of that. You have this wide cast of characters, and there's betrayal, and there's romance, and there's all of these different things that come along with those characters that you grow accustomed to. And in this game, there is so much of that. There's so much emotion and drama and also silliness and happy moments and really sad moments. And so what kept me coming back to this game was the characters themselves and the situations they get themselves put in and what happens to them, like who betrays who after how many games, like, oh, I never saw that coming, you know, stuff like that. And that's kind of the best way I can describe it. It was kind of like playing a TV show because it has that, like, you know, kind of like kung fu vibe to it, that, you know, cheesy action flick, B-movie stuff sometimes that I've always been naturally drawn to movies like that anyway. So it has a lot of that too. It's kind of like the perfect storm for me is what I would say, in a good way, a good storm.
That's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad that you found something that gripped you so much that you felt compelled to play it in its entirety. And now we have a Yakuza expert at What's Good Games.
It's me. I know, it was so cool. It was, you know, you finish a game and then immediately I would just, like, as the credits were rolling and done and whatnot, I would just boot up the next game. It's like, every time I finished it, I immediately hopped into the next one. I never had any fatigue or anything like that. Until, like, I would say that the very last game, you could tell that the devs were trying to wrap it up. And, you know, you got to understand that after 7 games of featuring the same city and, you know, more or less the same city, there's some new areas sprinkled in there and the same characters. Sure, you want to try something new, which I think is why Yakuza 7 does feature a new protagonist. But it was really cool knowing that when I finished Yakuza 0 that I still had 6 more games that I got to play in that series.
And I, so you didn't feel any sort of like fatigue after, you know, say you're on like the sixth game of it and you're like, I'm still in this similar area. And yes, you said there's new stuff, but.
No, that's a crazy thing is I think seeing something about it. And I, and maybe it's just because, you know, how much I love Japanese culture and I love the fascination of it and whatnot. But in reading all the signs, seeing all the stores being built and reading all the new signs in Japanese, I was like, oh, this is cool. But playing from Yakuza 0, which sets place in 85, and every game has more or less, you know, years in between them, and seeing how the city grows and changes, to me, I loved that. In fact, I was really disappointed that a part of Yakuza 6 doesn't take place in Kamurocho. I wasn't fatigued at that city at all. I would have preferred that the whole game was set there, actually.
Got it. So the city itself became a character that also evolved.
Exactly. Yes, I mean, that's a great way of putting it. That's exactly it. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah,
that is cool. Yeah, I can see how that would be appealing. You'd be like, ooh, I wonder what it's going to look like in the next game. Once you have that established pattern of it's not going to be literally the same copy pasta and like things will evolve and change. I think that that's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I just love that you said copy pasta.
Copy pasta. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's cool walking around and seeing like, oh, wow, that used to be this and now it's this. And that's kind of fun. But yeah, I just really, really enjoyed it. And I got to find some other games to play. Oh, no. But no, it's good. I'm sad they're over, but also I needed them to end because I would have kept playing.
You were happy that it happened.
I'm very happy that it happened.
So yes. One last question. Did you play it all on the same platform? Like, how old is the oldest game of that franchise? I don't know.
I don't know the original release date. So Yakuza 0 came out in 2015, 16? Right, or 2015, 16, right around there. And that one was made, and again, like I said.
But wasn't that like a prequel?
It's a prequel, yeah. And so I haven't become the Yakuza nerd like I am with Resident Evil lore, because I haven't, like. But that one was made after a certain amount of Yakuza games had been made, and it is a prequel, right. And then Kiwami and Kiwami 2 are recent remakes that remade Yakuza 1 and 2, which I think were early PS3 games, or maybe late PS3. They were PlayStation 3 games.
PlayStation 2, actually. So the original Yakuza came out in 2005 on PlayStation 2 and PlayStation 3. So it was a cross-gen game. And okay. Wii U, of all places.
Wow, that's weird.
And then Yakuza 2 was out in 2008, also PS2 and PS3 and Wii U. And then Yakuza 3 was in 2010 for PS3, PS4. 4 was in 2011, PS3, PS4. So it started transitioning to PS4. They must have done remasters then, right?
Yeah.
For 3 upwards.
So, I think so. Yeah.
Wait, so how did you play the originals?
Okay. Because
they don't have a PS4 port.
Yakuza 0, I played on Game Pass. Kiwami, at that point, was not on Xbox, so I hopped over to PlayStation. Because PlayStation 4 has Kiwami and Kiwami 2, which are the remakes. And then after that, they remastered 3, I think 3, 4, and 5, or just 3 and 4.
Just 3 and 4 looks. No, 3, okay. 4, and 5 are all on PS4. 3, 4, and 5, and 6 are all on PS4.
Right. I'm not sure which ones were remastered, but what I will say to anyone going down this Yakuza journey is going from Yakuza 0 to Kiwami to Kiwami 2 to Yakuza 3 is rough chuckles, because you go from these beautifully, like, the city is beautifully rendered and the cutscenes are just gorgeous, and then you hop into Yakuza 3, which is just a remaster. And it very still much looks like a PS3 game. But
you're like, wah, wah.
Yeah, but it's worth it because the story that's told is great. And it continues the story along. And it's not that long of a game. But yeah, I'm excited to do video about it after I look into it and just have some chats. I want to become one of the cool kids. More part of the Yakuza community now.
Yeah. Well, I'm happy that you're happy. It was the whole thing about Animal Crossing for me in the beginning. I was just like, yo, this isn't for me, but I'm happy that it's making people happy.
But
and then I got to a moment of overwhelming stress, and I was like, I can't play anything that requires stress. And this was right when Doom Eternal was launching, and I had played the first couple of hours, and I was just like, this is too much. I can't do it. Mm-hmm. I lost my cat. Like, shit's happening in the world. I was like, I just need to, like, sit on the couch and not engage and not do anything that's like gonna like give me palpitations. Yeah. And the thing for me that everybody kept talking about online, also I can't escape the fucking turnip price thing that's just perpetual on Twitter. Everybody always being like, who's got the turnip person with the highest price? And so I was like, okay, fine. I give up. I'm gonna download it. And so I did, and I get it now. It's still, there's still a lot of problems that I have with the game that I'm very frustrated by.
I mean, I think that I'm trying to let go. Like the things that the tools breaking?
Well, the tools breaking is super annoying, especially when I paid $2,500 for a very beautiful printed shovel that I bought when I was visiting Maria's Island. And I was like, this shovel is gorgeous. I like it. And it lasted a really long time. But like there was midway through before it broke when I asked some of the girls, we have a resident services Discord and that they put together. And I was like, so does this fancy shovel that I paid a lot of money for, do I get like the DIY recipe for that so I can rebuild this at a greater expense, obviously? And they were like, no. And I was like, wait, what? Oh. And then now it's broken and now it's gone. I was like, if I had known that, I wouldn't have spent 2,500 bells on it.
God,
I mean, it was cute, but like, if you don't give me the DIY recipe for 2,500 bells for a fucking shovel, fuck you, Tom Nook.
Uh-huh.
Rips. But like, I really appreciate everybody who has been really, really accommodating and helping me learn, from the people who showed up in the very first Animal Crossing stream that I did, and who have been very generous with giving me gifts and giving me bells and coming to visit my island. And Joey Noel has been wonderful, and Solid Snake has been great, and Trevor Starkey and Maria and Lauren and Ree, everybody who has been like trying to shepherd me through this Animal Crossing journey. Poor John is like, why don't you ever want to come visit my island?
Oh, John, no.
And I'm like, because usually when you and I play, it's at very different times of day. Because I'll have a break in the middle of the day when he's like on a conference call, when I'm like in between tasks, and I'll just like boot it up and I'll do something for literally like 5 or 10 minutes and then I'll put it down. Or what more happens is like we'll both be sitting on the couch at the end of the day when I'm just like, he's like, oh, what are you going to play tonight? And now that I've finished Final Fantasy VII, because that game gripped me in a way that I was like, I must finish this game. But now that it's done, I'm like, okay, well, I can go back to all of my games as services that I'm still having fun in. But when you're mentally exhausted, the idea of going in and doing inventory management in Destiny is just like, oh, no, I can't deal right now. But you know what I can do? I can dig up some fossils and go talk to Blathers.
Go pick some weeds, girl.
Yep.
And now there's a guy who will buy the weeds.
I know. That guy's a fucking saint. Oh, he's like, I'll take your crap and give you a beautiful bush. Oh. You're like, all right, all right, all right, all right. This is a good deal. I like
it. That's awesome. So, Andrew, how much are you playing at a time?
So it comes and goes. I think that's the way it is for most people with Animal Crossing. Yeah, yeah. My frustration is when I have time to sit down and commit to playing a couple of hours in a single go, the game roadblocks you in a way that I find incredibly frustrating. Mm-hmm. And I think this is why there was certain people, including my husband, that's like, you're going to hate this game.
Yep.
And I don't hate it. I just am frustrated by it. I'm frustrated that there isn't an additional activity that I can do that feels equally rewarding when I have to wait for something to be built, right? So now I've made my second upgrade on my house. So I'm going to hopefully add a room is like this third upgrade, right? The first is like you go from like the tent to the house, and then you go from the house to the bigger main room. And then I don't know what the third one is.
There's more. And keep building onto your house for a little bit.
Yeah. And I built my first bridge. And now because resident services has officially been upgraded, Isabel is now on the island, I can do more like terraforming and things like that, but I haven't gotten into that yet because obviously everything's very expensive. But I just feel like there's only a finite amount of stuff that you can do. And I know that there's like a lot of intricacies to the grinding of the RPG aspect of Animal Crossing, but I don't particularly find them rewarding. Like, I don't want to go around and just keep hitting a bunch of trees to collect wood to craft bullshit to just go sell back to Timmy at, like, you know, like a fraction of whatever.
Timmy.
And, like, I've caught my first two tarantulas, so that was exciting. Hey. Also, The first time I got bit by a tarantula, I literally screamed out loud because I didn't know that the switch rumbles when the tarantula bites you. And I was not expecting that. And I was like, I don't like that. That's not okay.
Yeah. It's a bit of a shock when you get bit by a tarantula because they don't generally do that.
Right? They don't bite you in normal life.
They definitely don't chase you. That's for sure. But yeah, so I remember there was this one time when I booted up and I literally walked outside of my house because I had fallen. I usually go back to my house and get into bed.
Lay in your
and
bed.
Then I like save and quit. I'm like, okay, time to go. But automatically you come out of your house and a fucking tarantula was literally right there. There was nothing I could have done. There was no way that I could have been fast enough because it's just the way it loads. And the tarantula was on my ass and it bit me immediately as soon as I stepped out. And then I fainted and went back into my house and then had to come back out again. I was like, that's bullshit. I didn't even think that could happen. Like, why is the spawn radius anywhere near your door? Like, it shouldn't be. But whatever, it was fine. I've hopped back into Animal Crossing a little bit because I just didn't play it for a while. And when the fucking bunny came, I was like, I don't like you. I don't like this. I don't like what's happening. Please leave.
What was his name?
Zipper, which is a serial killer name. And
it is.
Yeah.
Once he finally left and people were like, no, he's gone now. And I actually secretly was sort of hoping that most of my residents would have been mad that I hadn't logged in so long and left because I don't like them.
Which residents do you have?
The one I like is Nibbles, and she's a squirrel who thinks she's a pop star. So I'm okay with her. I actually don't even know the fucking rest of their names because I don't like them.
What kind of animals are they?
The O2, OG2 are the... I almost said the banana. He's a monkey.
Oh.
Monkeys just like bananas. Donkey Kong, bro. He's fine. He likes to work out. Whatever. I'm not too worried about. Then there's like the ram named Frida, who's dressed like a cheeseburger for some fucking reason.
Oh, yeah.
And then there's, I got a chicken named like Cluckles or some shit. I don't know. I don't like her. And I don't like the other guy who I also don't remember what his name is, but I think he's a pig. I think he's a pig. Man, honestly, I run away from him anytime he's on the screen.
So wait, now do the islanders just randomly show up, or do you find them at those other islands? Right.
You can run into some of them on other islands, yeah. Okay. But there were people I ran into on the islands that did not come to mine. And so what you basically have to build houses for people, and you don't know who's going to move into them, but you have to.
And they want the most random assortment of shit.
It's okay. Like, I just literally took it all back. All the outside stuff, I took it all back and sold it to Timmy.
You can do that?
Yeah. I'm definitely going to do that. This shit was mine. I fucking built it. It was made with my materials. This is mine by law.
Yeah. I have Joey the duck, and he wanted a hay bed, a swing seat, and a barrel. And I was like, this is an odd assortment of outdoor items.
I wouldn't trust that character.
No, like, the swing seat I get, but like, who wants a hay bed?
A fucking psychopath.
Yeah, I want a cute, like, fox or a cute wolf or a something. Like, I've seen other villagers. I'm like, these guys are cute. I want them.
Yeah, I have Agnes. She's pretty cute. She's like the little black and white piggy character.
Oh.
She's pretty cute. I've got Coach. I don't know what he is exactly. A moose, maybe?
Oh, yeah.
But he's like a gym bro. I just bought him a pull-up bar because he's really nice to me. and then I got Daisy, who's really cute, the little dog. Aww. And then there's one more who I'm forgetting. Oh, she's like a little mouse. I don't remember what her name is. But yeah, they all seem to be fine.
Yeah, I just want some of them to go so I can get someone more interesting. But I don't know.
There's no way to like
leave
to boot them. Right?
I thought it was okay. Granted, I need to go reread this article apparently because I thought you just didn't talk to them for like a week and then they got
That's
mad and left.
Too.
But maybe you have to be logging in and consistently not talking to them. You can't just not log in for.
Can
a week.
You give them weeds? That's how it works in during seasons. Oh.
I mean, you can send them garbage if you want.
I accidentally gave one of my villagers garbage because there's an option where it's like, oh, I have this thing for you. Oh, I found this. It's yours or whatever. And then it just takes you to your inventory. And so I went to my inventory and I was like, wait, but there's normally there's something in my inventory I'm happy to give. But that one time I was like, actually, I don't want to give up any of the things I have. So I gave him a tire and he was like, what? You gave me a piece of trash? And I was like, I'm sorry. It's the only thing I have that I'm willing to part with.
And you were like, yeah, fucking say thank you.
Okay. You're so welcome. So I'm looking at this article. And it says, unlike previous games, there's no foolproof way to kick a villager off the island. It says, but you, like Steimer said, stop interacting with them. This can prove to be tricky. It's one of the few ways to guarantee a neighbor moves out. By not speaking with the villager starts to feel as if they have no friends. Even the scorned villager chases the player down. Even if they chase you down, just keep running and ignore them.
That's what I've done. No, I do that. I do that all the time to the people I don't like. Like, Nibbles runs up to me, I'll say hello to her. Those fucking other chuckle fucks, no. They run up to me. It's actually really sad. But they're like, yo, Governor Marley. And I'm like, I just literally turn and run. And I just run in the other direction until I just go to Blathers. And I'm like, okay, let's talk to Blathers.
So it says, while not speaking with the villager, make sure to keep an eye on them. Eventually, the villager will be seen walking around with a cloud above their head. This is the moment you should interact with them. It represents the villager contemplating something, oftentimes whether or not they should leave.
Yes. Get the fuck out of my town.
However, not every cloud represents that. Oh my god. It sounds like get the fuck out of here, man.
Be like, I just want you to leave.
You can complain to Isabel.
No, if you complain to Isabel, it doesn't actually make them go. It's just like you can make them change their outfit or you can make them change their personality slightly. But that's it. Like, they won't leave.
Well, it says if you talk with Isabel multiple times, it should work. I don't know. Either way, fucking kick him off. Stammer, just grab a drink and just a bag and just, and then
I've just run away from them. I just run from everybody, just like in real life. Like, get out of here.
Looking for that cloud.
I know what you're trying to do. You're trying to
make that cloud materialize. He turns and runs the other direction.
Oh, my God. Like, oh, God, no. I don't want to talk to you.
That is so funny.
But, yeah, I'm enjoying my time. I just got a loan from our friend Maria. And so she's like, I'm going to give you this loan. Yeah, so I've been having trouble because I don't have enough time usually to do a lot of grinding to get bells.
No, I know, but and like, so, are you going to pay her back?
That was the condition. She was like, you can't quit playing until you pay me back. And she gave me a lot of bells. So,
okay, you guys tell us how many bells.
A
million?
Loan.
It's more than six figures. No, yes.
More than six figures. A billion bells?
That's
a lot more.
Listen, if Maria had a billion bells, she better not be making it a fucking loan.
I skipped a few zeros. It happened.
You did.
Zeros non-existent
straight
anyway.
To B. You were like $1 billion.
My money. Yeah. Okay,
she was like, I'll give you the loan, but you have to keep playing. And I was like, okay. But like, I think my frustration comes with that. There's this artificial like waiting period between each thing. So now it's like, so yesterday I upgraded my house, I moved the house's location, and I bought my first bridge, which, oh my gosh, like 168,000 bells for a bridge. I don't want the shitty log bridge.
Then
I have to pay you to take the bridge down and then pay you to put a new bridge up because Tom Nook is a jerk.
Yeah,
he pretends to be a nice guy. He's like, I'm here to celebrate our island, but really just give me all your bells.
Give me all your money and nobody gets it. Yeah, no, I think for me, I've already given up on the aesthetics aspect of this game. Just after seeing it Twitter and seeing all the fucking magnificent creations everybody else can make, I know I can't nor ever will want the energy for that. So I'm like, you know what, you motherfuckers, this is a practicality land. So give me a bridge that allows me to not use my stupid pole, and that's all I want. You know what I discovered is my fucking island is stupid and I need to terraform it because there's almost no place to go to put a bridge because all of the rivers are so curvy it won't actually let you put a bridge there.
Oh no.
And I was like, oh, I thought this was aesthetically pleasing, but it doesn't work out.
But like, it's bad that the game design offered you something that requires you to terraform to put bridges in. Like, that to me is bad game design.
I put it in like a weird, it wasn't able to put it where I wanted it to put it. I was like, oh, I usually like to take this path. I go like this way and I just jump over the river.
So you're saying that you just can't put a bridge in the exact place that you want correct. To
it's
put a bridge.
It's not optimal. So like I put a bridge, but it's like up over here instead of being down here.
Do care about aesthetics?
No, that was functional. I'm doing the fastest path.
Okay.
It's the pathing that I was irritated with.
I hear you. There's a lot to be irritated with in this game. But I am enjoying it. I like the customization aspect of it. I like the idea of like seeing progress and building something and making something unique. I love all the multitude of things that people are doing. So last week, Kind of Funny and Grimecraft, Clark, who is a fantastic DJ who's done many video game events over the past several years, did a concert. Like, he played live inside Animal Crossing, and it was something that I didn't even think was possible in this game. But because Nintendo's online infrastructure is hot garbage, it was like people couldn't just go. It wasn't like Fortnite where literally millions of people could go inside the game and enjoy a concert. Like, seven people could be inside his Animal Crossing island. And every time somebody comes to the island, it pauses everybody on the island. I hope Nintendo can use this quarantine time to contemplate why they haven't invested more in their online infrastructure, because the year is 2020 and people like to play online together.
We're not mad. We're just disappointed.
Correct. I mean, I'm kind of mad, but Steimer's just disappointed.
I mean, it would be nice if they could figure their life out, but...
Well,
you know, you can't force it, Andrea. They have to want help. They have to ask for it.
I know, Steimer. I just want it to be better.
I know.
But yeah, it's cool. I get it. I understand it. I'm going to hang in there and pay Maria back. And then as soon as I pay Maria back, I'll probably be
Maria, I like that Maria's your new Tom Nook. Yes.
Yeah, girl. Yes. Maria is Tom Nook confirmed.
I did. I put sponsored by Big Dill because her last name is Dill. But yeah, she's great. And now she's hooked me because now I care about her and I don't want her to hate me for taking bells and quitting. So now I have to pay her back.
Yeah, look what you've done. Look what you've gotten yourself into.
Now she's going to get into the turnip stock game so she can pay Maria back.
And then that's not going to be quick enough. And then you're going to have to turn to the criminal underworld.
She was in the tarantula business. She was in the oh my gosh. I don't know if I might have taken a screenshot when I was on her island. I don't know if I can communicate the sheer amount of tarantulas that she had placed on her island. What? There were so many boxes of tarantulas that the game couldn't even load them all fast enough. So I would run around, like, it was like a maze of tarantulas in, like, these little, like,
how
cages.
How long it taken her to afford that?
I have no idea how long it took her to amass that many tarantulas, but it's clearly why she has so many bells.
No shit.
But I was just like, oh my God, I did not even know this many tarantulas existed or spawned in Animal Crossing. But
they don't. She must have had to actually...
Do Tarantula Island,
which is basically a hack you can do. I tried it once. It takes too long for me. I don't have the patience for it. But, like, you can go to any island. Well, most of them. Some work better than others. The random ones you get with the Nook Miles tickets. And you basically just clear it out of anything that would spawn a bug. So you have to dig up all the trees, like, throw them out. All the flowers, remove all the petals from them. Like, get rid of all the rocks. Get rid of everything that could possibly spawn any type of bug. And then the only two types of bugs that should spawn, theoretically, are, like, some cockroaches on, like,
wharf roaches, water bugs, and tarantulas.
Correct, yeah. So, like, then you can, like, narrow it down a little bit more. But honestly, I tried it once. I kept getting water bugs. I was getting really irritated. I kept releasing those fuckers, trying to get more tarantulas. And it just was, I was like, this takes so much patience. I don't have it.
Hmm. Yeah. I kept getting to the couple of tickets that I bought. I just kept getting islands that had like multiple rivers running through them. So I was like, there's no way that I'm going to get, enough spawn. So I was like, I took the resources that I could, but now I'm just flush with resources. Like I have so many bunches of wood and twigs and clay and rocks that they're just littered outside my house because I have no place to store them.
You didn't put them in your house storage?
No, my house storage is full of clothes. I don't know. Like,
that is the most you shit I've ever heard. Wow. I have the outfit I'm wearing and I've sold everything else.
No, I have so many pairs of shoes already.
I need to get a new outfit for Animal Talking with Gary.
Yeah, let's go shopping in Animal Crossing. We can have some fun. I also admittedly buy way more like wallpapers and floors than I'm probably ever going to use.
I literally have, when I played, I hadn't bought any, but that's not surprising.
I've spent way too many bells on like aesthetic stuff. Like I'm like, I told some friends, I was like, I just want to buy every potted plant that I can at Animal Crossing so I can decorate my house.
You're like, I can live vicariously through Animal Crossing. This is how I want to.
I can't buy them in real life. They're too expensive.
Maybe I'll come to Maria for a loan and maybe I'll get back into the game. Also, Maria is playing Yakuza. So shout out to Maria. I didn't know she was a Yakuza fan. Oh yeah. We have a lot to talk about.
Nice.
Maria, you and me, girl.
Well, maybe she should do a guest spot on the show with you.
Oh yeah. I don't know if she's finished all of them, but I would love that. Well, I'm happy.
No pressure, Maria.
Good job, Andrea. You did the thing. You're playing a game I never thought you would, and you're enjoying it, and you love Final Fantasy VII. And what's happening?
Nobody knows what's happening in the world.
It's weird.
It changes every day. We didn't even talk about the fact that GDC officially announced today that they're going all digital, and the GDC summer is not happening anymore.
Yep.
So.
Yep.
That happened.
That's not
anywho.
Surprising.
We have one more segment to get to, so we're going to take one more quick break. When we come back, it's your Patreon-produced segment, and we're going to be talking about if you could create your own game, what would it be and what elements of real games would you take inspiration from? It's going to be a fun discussion. We'll be right back. What's good, everybody? Welcome back. It's the final segment of the What's Good Games podcast. And now we bring to you our Patreon-produced segment for the month of April. Yes, we know it's technically May, but it's
a day off, May. Semantics.
Yeah. It's true. Brittany.
Huh?
Can you tell me about this segment?
I would love to tell you about this segment. So, ladies and gentlemen, every month on patreon.com/whatsgoodgames, I take your suggestions for third segment topics and y'all submit them and then I pick some and then I'm like, okay, y'all go vote on your favorites. And then you do. And we wind up here once a month with a topic.
It's true. It's true.
So that's what this is all about. We're going to talk about how we would create our own ideal video game and what elements of other games would we take. So thank you, Chris Lionbeard.
And one of the other things that we do at patreon.com/whatsgoodgames is have a variety of membership levels for you to participate in. We also have a variety of rewards that go with these membership levels. And for our mythic patrons and above, one of those rewards is a shout out on the podcast. If you've been listening to What's Good Games for a while, you know that this is a fun moment that we do every month where we run through the names of our mythic patrons and do our best to not mispronounce them, but inevitably mispronounce something.
It's true.
So without further ado, how about Brittany will kick us off, then Steimer will take up the mantle, and then I will do
bring up
place.
The rear.
Yeah, exactly.
Chewie's godson.
Adriana Rock Williams.
Al Tribesman.
Alberto Andres Videla.
Alex Regopoulos.
Alexander David.
Alex Cooler.
Andrew Cotton.
Ariella Furman.
Meg Zoom Pal.
Bill Stillwell.
Brian Harper.
Brian R. Johnston.
Carl Peterson.
Cesar Torres.
Chip Bigelow.
Chris Wilson.
Crystal Lindmark.
Christopher Peters.
Shy Jackson Burgess.
Daniel Hull.
Derpy, 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 Der.
Devon Nitz.
Okay, I was not ready for that. That's hilarious.
That's great.
Donato Sanicchio III.
E. Benjamin Checkness.
Elizabeth Brooke.
Elmo Shell.
Emily Kent.
Eric Z.
Ermagerd Arenda.
Oh, Ferris, it's okay.
Gary Peck.
Gio Corsi,
Gregory Horton,
Jake Sue,
Jared Howard,
Jasmine Lee Senza,
Jason Demers,
Jeff Phillips,
Jessica Bloom,
Joe Kennison,
Joe Schlieff,
Joe Wilson,
John Drake,
that guy, Jocelle Bassa,
Justin Foshi,
Justin Foss,
Kenneth Stimmel,
Kevin Komacki,
Kia B,
Lucas Cheney,
Marco Ontiveros,
Marcus Brown,
Mark Drastrup,
my family,
Matthew Goder.
Oh, I thought I was going to get to say it this month. Matthew Simpson,
Mars Picasa,
Melanthius Owens,
Michaela Sage,
Mohammed,
Malay Bittner,
Nam Bui,
Nathan Watkins,
Nathaniel Schaun,
Nicole Humphrey,
Noel Neveras,
Ozzy Mieha,
Paige Porter,
Patrick Higgins,
Patrick Landry,
Patrick Weller,
Pete Shoemaker,
Philip Dreher,
Pino,
Punctified,
Pure Boo Octopus,
RJ Bryan,
Regan Ibsen,
Renate Burns,
Robert Leonard,
Robert Adams,
Roland Bala,
Sean I,
Sean Smith,
Sean Stevenson,
Stephanie Fitzwilliam,
Tara Bruno,
Teresa Enert,
The Male Escort,
oh dear, the Supreme Commander of the Cyber Chihuahua Ninja Army,
Throw 7,
Tony Shea,
Trent Betty.
You missed Tracy H.
Oh, sorry, Tracy H. My bad, girl. You.
It's all good. Tracy H. and Trent Pennington.
Trevor Starkey.
Tyler Michael.
Tyler Phillips.
Wavy Chula.
Will Collum.
Will Hernandez.
Yasun Kajanomai.
And Zach Hershey Kiss.
Thank you so much to our mythic patrons and above. We appreciate and love you guys for supporting everything that we do here at What's Good Games. We say this all the time, but we can't say it enough, that you, our patrons, make our show possible, particularly right now. The fact that you guys continue to support everything we do makes us so happy and means so much to us. And we're super excited to celebrate our Patreon anniversary and the launch of What's Good Games with you in just a couple of weeks. So hopefully we'll see you on the stream. But for now, let's get to Lion Beard's question.
Sorry.
It's okay. Burps happen.
Reading. Okay, so I will read the question one more time. And the question is, well, that's a lot of names I got to scroll through. If you could create your own game, what would it be? And what elements of real games would you take inspiration from? I can kick things off because you know me. Okay.
Yes.
All right. I'm just going to list. I got some bullet points here. So I'm going to go down my list here. It would have the character. It'd be a medieval RPG. Surprising okay. one. It would have the character creation of Black Desert Online. It would have a story alongside The Witcher, in a setting alongside The Witcher, where there's this huge, The Witcher 3 primarily, where there's this huge thriving
There's lots
world.
Of sex.
Huh?
There's bathtub scenes?
Yes. Well, of course. Yeah, lots of fucking. I mean, banging. I can't say that for. That's really inappropriate. Don't unsponsor our sponsors.
It's totally inappropriate.
A huge, thriving world. And what I love about the setting of The Witcher is that there's all this stuff going on, but whether or not you discover it and whether or not you want to interact with it is up to you. I think that's really fucking cool. I want the party member style and the in-game banter from BioWare games. So, you know, when you're just like running around and people are chatting. Relationship building, kind of like Fire Emblem, Three Houses and Fire Emblem in general, where you can see all the different characters have these different levels of intimacy with each other. And unlike
that
Fire Emblem,
so pervy.
I know, right? I know when I said that, I was like, ooh, intimacy. Goodness. Okay, baby, they boink or they don't boink. It's up to you. I want a castle building. So when we were talking about the village building in AC Valhalla, I like love that. I like Scars of Arcadia had a good one. I know Dragon Age Inquisition kind of had something like that. But I want the customization of, like, Animal Crossing. Like, where you can just build your own fucking castle however which way you want. And I want it to have purpose and meaning. The leveling would be like Skyrim or Asheron's Call. Essentially, you are a blank slate and you could do anything you want. You can be any kind of build you want. And it would have the visceral combat of Dying Light.
You've made an impossible game.
No. Okay. Never.
I mean,
never.
She's the editor that just adds more instead of taking anything away.
Which is fine.
And the producers are all like, no.
Here's the thing. Chris did not ask if we needed to make a good game or not. He just said a game.
So this would be a good game. It maybe not a reasonable game, but a good game. This would be a phenomenal game. This would make game of the year all over again.
I don't know that it would, but I think it's a good effort. Really? Only because I think when you build something so out of scope, it will ultimately fail in a practical sense.
What's out of scope about it?
So the first thing that's out of scope.
Oh my God, I love she wrote notes.
I had to. She just kept going, and I was like, I have to write some of this down.
Let's go.
So the first thing that's out of scope is the setting. So this medieval setting that you've chosen is not really conducive to some of the other things that you want to have happen in the game.
So
the customization, first and foremost, there's inherently a very limited amount of items that you can do in a medieval setting that's going to feel authentic to medieval. And so I would say you should just ditch the medieval and go pure fantasy.
Okay, so when I was saying medieval, okay. So that's basically what I meant. I was thinking, like, give me swords.
You mean, like, high fantasy. You mean high fantasy.
Swords and castles and dragons and orcs and all the fantasy elements. Oh, my. Like that. Oh, yeah, fuck yeah. This is my ideal game.
So when you say fantasy, you think more like Skyrim fantasy, Lord of the Rings fantasy, Harry Potter fantasy. What kind of fantasy are we talking?
Well, probably along the lines of Skyrim.
Dragon Age fantasy?
Yeah, I mean, I like all the different races. I want, you know, like the big creatures, like the dragons, and like I said, the trolls and the orcs. So whatever that is. That's like all of the above, right? I think all of those series more or less have those.
Sort of, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so it clearly sounds like you want like a action RPG.
Action RPG, multiple party members, yes.
Are you going to emphasize combat or emphasize progression, RPG progression?
¿Por qué no los dos?
Because very few, if any, I don't know a single game that has nailed both in a giant open world setting.
So, okay. So, okay.
We don't need to sit here and rip her idea apart, but I think...
I'm trying to help Brittany come up with the best Brit game possible.
Okay. Okay, I think about the combat in Skyrim. Like, the combat to me... So I like the visceral combat of Dying Light, right? Where the weapons feel heavy, where everything you do feels like it has, like, weight and meatiness to it, right? So I think when it comes to, like, the sword and shield combat, that would work really well. But as long as, like, as far as the RPG progression goes, I just think, like, something along the lines of Skyrim would be good. Or, like I said, with Asheron's Call, in the sense that you can build any kind of character you want. Now, here's the thing. I took this question as, if you could make the perfect game and it would all work, how would it work? I'm not a developer. Sure. I'm not here to balance this shit. I'm just here to spitfire
my
ideas.
Oh, no, of course. We're definitely not making you balance it. So when you say the leveling of... No, I'm just trying to refine your idea so I have a clear sense of what the game is like. So when you say the leveling of Skyrim, do you mean that you want, like, this, like, super multi-branch tree where you can pick and put points into all of these different things? You want a more concise tree where there's, like, three or four branches... instead of all of these different branches.
I want to be
a blank slate. And is one of those branches combat focused or no?
Yeah. Okay, so a blank slate. So like in Asheron's Call, for example, you could be any kind of character you wanted. If you wanted to fucking wear chainmail but be a mage, you could do that. Granted, was it the smartest idea? Probably not, but you could still do it. I don't like it, and this is an issue I have with a lot of MMOs these days, is how they pigeonhole you into these classes, and you can only do certain things. You can't build your own character. And in my mind, if you fuck up
because
and build a
game design is hard.
If what?
Because game design is hard, and
no, I know.
Do
that's
whatever
what I'm
the fuck
you build
they want is not achievable.
If you build a broken again, game design is hard. But this, I'm not a game designer. This is my perfect game. It doesn't have to like actually work.
You are right.
So yeah. So basically, like if you fuck up your character, you just have to respec and get good. And that's something I love about Asheron's Call is that you could do that. It was like your own thing. And there was not a single character out there like you. I mean, there probably was way, like, barely, like, down the line. But that's something I love about RPGs is when they just let you build your character the way you want to build it. And you don't have to go down this very specific tree, which I get for balancing issues in a real game with real development issues. I get. But in a fantasy game, in Brit's ultimate game, you could just be whatever the fuck you wanted, and it would work.
What's the art aesthetic like? What does it look like?
I'm trying to think of the prettiest game I've played recently. Probably Horizon Zero Dawn. Yes. Jinx. Jinx, owe me a Coke. But yeah, I would say probably Horizon. It's as beautiful as Horizon. Maybe not as many trees.
You keep saying that, but you're fine with trees. You just have this weird anti-tree bias that I don't understand.
She's like, I live in the state of Washington. I fucking hate trees.
All day, every day, man. Just fucking trees.
Makes perfect sense. Oh, my goodness.
Is it single player?
No, it can be co-op if you would like it to be co-op, because I think playing with friends is fun.
Why not? Throw it in there.
Just throw it in there. Why not? This is my perfect game.
Add to the stew.
What's the name of your game? Do you have a name?
Oh, God. Tree Apocalypse The Reckoning.
Perfect.
It's a working title.
That's the code name, okay?
Does not reflect the final product.
Exactly.
Tree Apocalypse.
Okay. The Reckoning. The Reckoning. Don't forget The Reckoning.
The Reckoning.
God damn it, Andrea. You're my PR girl. You gotta get this right.
If there was ever a segment that deserved to be animated, it's this conversation that just happened. Someday we'll be able to afford an animator and to animate some of these fucking talks.
It's gonna be great. What if the zombies get infected? Okay, now I'm getting too off the rails.
Wait, no, there's zombies in this game too.
Yeah, wait, Why not? Why not? What if the trees mutate and then there's bees? Follow me. There's bees that come.
Not bees.
I need something that pollinates.
What do bees do to you?
Honeybees. They're nice bees. They're honeybees.
Yeah.
Okay. They are immune to this thing that's happening. Okay. So they're immune to this thing that's happening. And they carry the pollen from one tree to another, but they somehow along the way fuck it all up. And they create some sort of virus, right? Something that happens.
What if the bees are finally turning on us? They've learned. They've gained more.
That's the sequel, Simer. That's
Tree They discovered that there were actually bees that were made in a lab, and they've mutated and evolved.
Oh my God, the killer bees! Yeah, yes. Tree Apocalypse: Revenge of the Bees. Working title. That'll be the sequel.
Wait. So is it Tree Apocalypse, like as in like a tree with branches? Because I have Shree Apocalypse.
No, tree as in a tree with branches.
The Shree is what we call the trees that are infected.
Oh, trees. Jesus.
There you go. That's good.
So you have these trees, and then you have these bees that are cross-pollinating. They create a virus somehow. I don't know. They're doing weird things with the pollen. And then when they infect a tree, the tree now becomes a Shree.
Mm-hmm.
You see?
And now it's like The Happening on crack.
Exactly.
Yeah, I'm into it.
And then it's like it follows, and the trees kind of like follow you when you're not looking.
Oh, shit. Now they're like not Alice in Wonderland. Wizard of Oz trees that are really fucking creepy and
talk
to
you? This is how we incorporate the banging, Stimer. This is how we make the banging happen.
Why is there banging in this universe?
I don't like where this path is headed.
Because it follows. You have to bang someone for the tree to stop.
Okay, yes. Now I'm
You got what I'm saying? Yeah.
I thought you were trying to fuck the trees, and I was like,
oh, God, no. This isn't Superstar. We are not Mary Catherine Gallagher. That is not what we do in this game.
Wait, so this is a scary game.
Now it is. That's the third game. That's the end of the trilogy. It'll turn into a survival horror game about trees.
Is it a three-part game, or is it one game that's in three episodes?
No, I think we'll have three part. Yeah, I think.
Yeah, we need three parts. Now I'm invested, and now
I'm a stakeholder in this.
See, y'all doubted me, but look at this beautiful thing it's turned into.
Wow. Okay. Okay. Tree Apocalypse: The Reckoning, parts 1, 2, and 3.
Yeah.
Well, part two is what? Revenge of the Bees.
What's the third going to be called? Oh, I don't know. So we got the Shrees that are the infected trees, right? So we got the Shrees. Yeah. And then they're following you, and you have to bang someone.
Okay, so Tree Apocalypse,
Rise of the
Tree follows.
Tree follows. Bang tree to be follows. Free. Bang to be free. Don't forget that second part. That's really
bang
important.
Bang to be free of the tree.
Yeah. Bang to be free of the tree. Ooh.
So the first one is just Tree Apocalypse.
The Reckoning. The second one. The Reckoning.
Tree Apocalypse, The Reckoning. Sorry. the second one is Tree Apocalypse, Revenge of the Bees.
Working title.
And then the third one is Tree Apocalypse Bang to be Free?
Yes.
in parentheses, of the trees.
Yes.
So this is, the world's greatest titling system. and
we're copywriting
this.
I don't want anyone to steal our
TM. We've already put it out into the world, and this is a public space, so therefore it is copyright protected, I think.
I'm a
copyright lawyer expert.
Yeah, see, look at that. Andrea's our PR. Simon's the attorney. I almost called you an attorney. It's attorney and lawyer.
And it's a new job.
Just the fucking whack job with the weird ass ideas.
I'm the whack job. Okay. This was way more fleshed out than I was anticipating. Brittany, you nailed this segment. You nailed it.
She usually does.
Thanks. Yeah.
It's true. Steimer, do you have an idea prepared, or would you like me to riff?
Here's my qualm. I do have a separate answer, but as Brittany was talking, because I wrote some things down, I was like, it could be this or could be that. But as she was talking, I was like, to me, I don't know what to tell you. The perfect game for me already exists. The perfect series for me already exists. It's Quest for Glory. No, it's not Pip. I love Viva Pinata, but no, it's Quest for Glory, because I'm like, it has everything I would want. And if we could modernize it in a way, that would be great. But that would be what I would really want out of the thing, because it had a lot of puzzle elements. Every game was the same character. However, it focused on different lore of different countries, different regions, which I am always fascinated by. I love, it's part of the reasons why I really liked the new God of War, why I'm interested in Assassin's Creed Valhalla. Like, I want to poke around in ancient lore and figure out what people believed in and why, and just like, I find it really fascinating.
It's based on real world lore.
Yeah. So like, there's Baba Yaga in the first game, which is a real folklore. There's not all of them, but like, they're usually based on like different regions. So your character gets transported around, then it goes to like an Arabic setting, then it goes to like the Saharan desert, then it goes to sort of like, my mind is blanking on the proper term for it, but like Slovakian kind of area, that folklore. And then the last one was more Germanic. So it kind of hit a lot of those different areas that I would think were really interesting. I also enjoy, I would like the combat to be better, because it was a really old game back then. They didn't really have, a lot going on, but I liked the way it worked. It just needs to be more maybe action oriented, more visceral, be fun. It has a similar system to what Brittany was talking about, where you can build a fighter that has magic, or you can build a thief that has magic. Like, you can put points into whatever you want, and it's a Skyrim leveling system. So the more you do those things, as long as you have an initial amount of points in them, you can continue to build those skills. The characters carried over from one game to the next. You could bring your save file over. It unlocked a new character class if you did that. You had romance in it. Like, there were so many things where I'm like, this is just like, for especially when it was created, it's such a fucking masterpiece that I feel like I like that. That's some good
is
shit.
This
right
what
there.
Brittany, is this what Brittany should go play next?
I was
is that
just
going to
say, would you recommend playing it?
Yes, because I also think, when you call it an adventure game, I think that would scare a lot of people off, because a lot of adventure games are nonsensical puzzles, is what I will call them at best, right? Like, some shit you'd never think of, but all of the puzzles that you need to solve are not only logical, they are based on your class. So how you choose to play will depend on how you can solve the issue at hand.
Interesting. So I would whack a lot of shit. Well, you know what
I mean. You need to get good if you're going to do that, because like I said, the comic kind of sucks. But you can, you could theoretically just be like, yo, I'm a fighter and I'm just going to run in there and fucking kill everything. You could do that technically. Except on like one part I'm thinking in the beginning, where it is a puzzle, you do need to like figure out how to knock people down without fighting them physically. But a lot of the main pathway things are like shit you can brute force your way through. You have to like think like the fighter. What's the fighter going to do? Or think like the magician. What would the magician do? And I really, really liked that. Now, that being said, I do think there's also, in a similar vein, which is what got me thinking about Quest for Glory, a people /... I don't know what, I guess you just call them a people. The Romani people, I think, are really interesting. And part of what I found interesting about them is the way that they traveled. And I think it would be really interesting to have more games focus on them and their culture, and also gives you a little bit of freedom to explore others along the way and along their paths. So I don't know exactly what that game would be, but I do think it could be interesting to do an action RPG sort of. I would think it would be more maybe like a, in terms of structure, like a Tomb Raider in that there are mini sandboxes that you are entered into, but it's not. I wouldn't want like an Assassin's Creed style. Here's a giant fucking map. Go do all the things. That sounds not what I would be looking for. It'd be much more of like a curated experience storyline wise. But I think that that could be pretty cool and something that not a lot of people have done anything with.
So I'm just going to throw this out there, and I don't know how relevant it is. So the Uncharted franchise, for example, is part of the reason why you like that is because Nathan Drake tends to visit these different cultures and you learn about different things like that? Or is that just like not nitty gritty? Okay.
No, I do find I like that part. I like being like, ooh, and then it's what I always think. I'm like, is this real or is this some bullshit they made it for the game? So then I like go and I look it up and I find out the parts that are actually true or the parts that are just, you know, a little bit muddled because it's history and who really knows.
Interesting.
I am so fascinated by, you've talked about Quest for Glory a little bit in the past, but I guess I didn't realize that you had so much passion for it. I mean, especially since like the games are very old. Like the first game came out in 1989, and this feels like a franchise that could really benefit from a Final Fantasy VII style remake.
They will never do it, but yeah, oh my god, if they did, it would be fucking amazing.
Now, is it the same people that made that game recently?
Yeah, Hiro U. Those are the two writers, the main writers of that game.
Got it.
And one of the things that I did really like about, now if you do play it, Brittany, please save often and frequent, like just save all the time.
Okay.
Because the game will still let you do stupid shit or you just die. And the death notes, I guess, for lack of a better word, whatever the pop up, when it happens, they're always really funny. So, for instance, if you are a thief, you have a lockpick set. That's part of the thing that comes with your character. You can pick your nose with it. However, if your lockpick skill isn't very good, you can kill yourself by picking your nose with it. Because it jams straight up into your brain. So, like, that, and like there's just, like, goofy shit like that. Where I love it so much. And it's... I can't even explain to you. It is on goodoldgames.com. So if you are like, you know what, fuck it, I'm in quarantine. I think if they're like $5 or something for like the whole set, it's really cheap.
Oh, wow.
But they are just some really well-made games. The second one's a little bit weird in that it's different than all the rest. A lot of them are, you know, point and click, like you click and walk, whatever. In the second game, you have to type out a lot of the commands.
Oh,
so it's like, ask so-and-so about whatever, ask them about this, put the water on this. Like, so that part, that second game can be a little jarring for people. But otherwise, the rest of them are fairly
Are they long games?
Hmm.
I mean, depending on like how quickly you get the puzzles, I guess.
I think it just probably depends on how fast you can figure out what you need to do. For me, I could fucking speed run through them because I've played them all so many times. Yeah. And I'm just like, yes, all right, this is done in a couple of hours. Let's go.
I'd love to watch you play that sometime. I think it'd be really interesting.
I mean, hey, man, if I finish Later Daters early, maybe I will hop into a Quest for Glory run.
That'd be so cool.
On my birthday. I mean, really, what else do I want to play on my birthday besides my favorite games?
I know.
Right?
So, right? Yeah.
Into it.
Yeah. I love it. It's been so interesting listening to you kind of both of you pick games, and like it's tough for me because like when I think about games that I love, like the genres vary so wildly. If I look back on like my favorite games of all time, it's like, do I want to make like a music and rhythm game because of my love for Amplitude, Frequency, Rock Band, and Guitar Hero? Or do I want to make an arcade racing game because of my love for Cruising USA, Need for Speed, Burnout, and others? Or do I want to like go with something more modern, like a first person shooter or like an action RPG? Because I really didn't get into RPGs until I was an adult. I like never played RPGs as a kid, just straight up did not do it ever. And I don't know if it's just because I didn't have time or interest or what. And so, like, my inclination is, like, oh, but RPGs feel like they just have so much more creativity that you can do. But, like, I don't think I would. I think I would make something very similar to Destiny if I got to pick. But I would make it with a very fleshed-out campaign. Because I think that's what Destiny is really missing for me. So I do like the sci-fi setting. I probably would bring in more fantasy elements. Not to say that that game is in any way, shape, or form based in realism, because it is most definitely not. But there's not enough magic in that game for me that feels like it's actual magic. Obviously, I say that, and even saying it out loud is kind of a head scratcher, because there's like, technically it's like you're just like shooting with magic all the time. Like each of the classes has all of this magic that they use with magic of the light, and then you have like void and arc and solar and all these things that you do, but it doesn't feel like magic in Destiny the way that, you know, Mass Effect even kind of leans a little bit more into magic with like the biotics. All the biotics, but it doesn't feel fantasy to me. It feels more like space fighting than it does like, it feels more sci-fi.
It's more like
to me.
Pew pew. Weird, yeah, and like, shit.
So I would probably lean more into the fantasy elements of what's happening in a sci-fi shooter. And I would also bring in just way more story. And I would get rid of some of these repetitive bullshit live service stuff that they have tied to it. And I would just make it the same way that it feels super polished and like the gameplay loop is fun and it's rewarding. And I would allow people to put as many different shaders on their outfit as they want, whenever they want. And they could change the color of their outfit at any time with no restrictions.
That would be that's a pipe dream, Andrea.
I would love to hear, whenever you're done with your Destiny idea, your take on the music genre, because that's something I don't know nearly enough about to even speculate on. That would be interesting.
Sure. But I think what I really just want, if I could take Destiny and fix it.
Turn it into a music game.
Air quotes, fix it. No, definitely wouldn't turn it into a music game. Because like the thing about music is sometimes you just need a break from the repetitiveness that a music and rhythm game requires of you, because like any skill, like game that really focuses on the skill based part of it and not the creativity part of it, it's repetition. You just play and play and play and play the same stuff over and over and over again until you get the pattern, and then you essentially memorize the pattern, and then you have to execute the pattern. And that's what's really satisfying about music and rhythm games to me, to go off on a little tangent, is that you get the sense of satisfaction of recognizing it. And what's really, like, I'm having, like, this fucking epiphany when I'm saying this out loud right now about me saying this and being like, oh, this is why I love music and rhythm games. And this is clearly why people love Souls games as well, but in a very different way. But it's about recognizing a pattern, playing the pattern, failing at the pattern, and then ultimately, by war of attrition, learning the pattern and then beating the pattern, and then you've succeeded and you feel like a god because you've succeeded against the pattern. Whether that pattern is a boss hitting you with an axe over and over again and killing you, or whether it's a bunch of notes on a highway that you hit at the precise right moment. And if you don't, you have to quit and start the highway over again, because you know if you don't, you're not going to get enough points to succeed to the score that you need to go on to the next song. I never thought about it that way before, but now that I do, I have a deeper appreciation for people who like Souls games. I still don't get it because it's not my kind of pattern that I like, but now I understand it a little bit more. Anyway.
The psychology of it is very similar.
Yes, it is. So that aside, going back to like my FPS, because I've really gotten into shooters in a way that I never thought possible. Like when I first started my career in video games, I was afraid of shooters. They were foreign to me. I always felt like I was failing when I played shooters, and I was frustrated and ultimately not having fun. And when you're not having fun when you're playing a game, it's like, what's the point, right? Like, you're playing this for entertainment, to pass the time, to share a community experience with other players. And if none of those things are bringing you joy, like, why are you doing the thing, right? Find something else to do. You have one life to live. Make it happy. And I was always afraid of shooters because I failed a lot. And I finally was forced to play because of my career that I chose. And I was like, well, I guess I have to play these shooters if I'm going to get these opportunities to talk about them on camera. I don't want to look like a dummy. So I just have to do it. And so when I finally forced myself to sit down and do it and practice and got good at it, I really developed a love for them and an appreciation for the gameplay design behind them, which is why if I was going to make a game, Lionbeard, I would make a really highly polished, super fun, first person shooter that has great PvE elements and that obviously will have a PvP element because shooters should have PvP, but also has an amazing campaign that you can play co-op with your friends or play by yourself, but has a campaign, like a full story campaign. Like, I love what Machine Games has done with Wolfenstein. I just don't like the setting of Wolfenstein as much as I like fantasy elements, whether it be sci-fi or high fantasy. The fact that Wolfenstein is set in this really dark, really sad time of American history, and I know it's an alternative history and that, like, it's fake, right? But it's still the Nazis. I'm like, I don't want to live in that world. I don't want to spend time in that world. Fuck those guys. Like, they're bad. And I know that you spend the whole game killing them, but, like, I don't want to be there. I'd rather kill some weird made-up alien that doesn't exist than have to, like, look at swastikas all day long. That's just my personal feeling of it. Fair. And I play those games because I appreciate the artistry of them. But that being said, I would take something like that, that kind of campaign that feels really robust and cinematic and has these storytelling moments, but also has super slick FPS gameplay that feels good, that's weighty, and the guns are good, and the gunplay is good, and just take the setting and make it different and build it into this sci-fi fantasy world. And then also have all those PvE elements of, like, the raids and, like, the public instances and the shared world aspect of Destiny is a thing that I think is so innovative and that Bungie just does not get enough credit for, that very few games do well. And that's why every time I have the opportunity to nominate them for a multiplayer award, I do, because I think they go unrecognized in the tech behind the multiplayer building that they did in that game. Anyway, this has gone places, this conversation.
It's been good. We've created an award-winning trilogy. Steimer's convinced me to play Quest for Glory, and you had an epiphany.
I had a fucking epiphany. About Souls games, of all things. Don't like Souls games.
Comes around. Did it.
Oh, boy.
Thank you, Lionbeard. Maybe that'll be my Viking name, is Lionbeard.
That's a good one.
Good one.
It's a good one. Yeah. I don't think it gets better than this, so we're just going to go ahead and call it for tonight. Thank you very much for that fantastic suggestion for a conversation. If you want to suggest our next conversation to happen, you've got to get over to patreon.com/whatsgoodgames. Sign up for one of our membership levels. You can get in for as little as $2 a month, you guys.
That's what she said.
That is what she said, indeed. And then we vote. You make suggestions, everybody votes, and then we talk about it and have conversations like Treepocalypse, bang to free.
Andrea, you keep forgetting The Reckoning, and I'm really upset about it.
No, okay? I read part three, okay? Part three is Treepocalypse, bang to free of the trees.
Okay, do you get the parentheses
bang
in there?
To be free. Damn it, bang to be free.
And you gotta get the parens in there.
Yeah, yeah. No, she did. She did.
I got the okay. Parentheses okay, with okay, the, okay. Of the trees.
Yeah, no, she did. She did.
Okay.
All right, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us. We hope to see you Monday morning, bright and early, for What's Good Games Live. But for now, we hope you have a great weekend thinking about epiphanies, Quest for Glory, and banging trees with crazy bees. Goodbye, everybody.
That could be like part four.
Sure. Why not?
Banging trees with pretty bees. Oh, boy. Let's pollinate.